The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. 93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
This could be good. If you indeed are in a crappy mood, these are some insults that you can use throughout the course of the day. But these are international. These are insults from around the world. Casey, you had said something earlier.
Yes.
An international insult when we were off air. What was it?
Malacca. It's a Greek for a-hole.
Okay. Oh.
And then there is...
No, you said a whole phrase.
Well, I said Tikanis, which is like, how are you doing? And then I said Malacca. And then there's...
Oh, how you doing, a-hole?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And then there was another one. I don't know what the translation is, but Pusti. So...
I tell you what it sounds like.
But it's not what it sounds
like. It's not what it sounds like.
I know one in Arabic.
Oh, okay.
Nard in the muk.
And what is that?
I just like saying it. It's
your goat has herpes.
No, it's pretty vulgar. It's like go F your mother or something like
that. Wow. Those all translate to things that would make sense as an insult. Are you talking about things that how is that an insult?
Well, like this one. I'll give you this is a Chinese insult, and I will try to pronounce it as best I can, but then I'll give you the translation.
Okay.
In Chinese, it's Nimukin Shiyi Gedawugi.
Okay.
Which means your mother is a big turtle.
Your mother? Oh my God.
Uh-huh.
Somebody told me that. I'd punch them out.
Now, some of these are actually good.
Your mother is a big turtle. Do they explain why that is an insult in China?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there's no explanation.
Your mother's? Your mother's a big turtle.
Here's a Spanish one. Me cago en la leche, or L-A-C-H-E, however.
Your mother is a Chinese turtle.
Yes. I crap in the milk.
Well, that's good.
Wait, say it again. What is it?
I crap in the milk?
Yeah. Mi cago en la leche.
Mi cago.
Okay.
Yeah.
So wait a second. So that's an insult. You're saying I crap in your milk.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. In your milk or the
it
milk?
It just says the milk.
Just in the general milk.
I would imagine, you know, maybe it means the milk that we drink or
whatever. Well, that makes you look bad. That doesn't sound like an insult, right?
I think if you're going to launch it as an insult, you would crap in the recipient's milk.
Right.
Here's a Russian one. Perhot Padzalopanyana. It means you, sir, are ass dandruff.
you, sir, are ass dandruff.
I like that.
Here's a...
Here, calling me ass dandruff. I think that we can realize that we're very much the same, that in many ways we're all ass dandruff, and that none of us craps in each other's milk.
Yeah.
He says that we are ass dandruff.
All right, here's a Finnish insult. Atitsi nai poroha, which means your mother married a reindeer.
Oh. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's fine words.
Here's a Yiddish one, and because there's no way I can pronounce this because there's a lot of and stuff
they
like that.
They phlegm it up, don't
in
they?
Yiddish, they do phlegm it up. Liggen in Dred und Bachen Bagel.
Your mother uses bagels as tampons?
No. What? May you lie in the ground and bake bagels.
I got the bagel right.
Yeah.
May you lie in the ground and bake bagels.
Yeah, that's apparently some kind of a... I would imagine lying in the ground means you're dead or something like that.
I think our insults are more linear. American insults are more cut to the chase.
Yeah, but there are some that, you know, I remember being called a ham and egger once, and I was like, okay.
That's right.
I don't know what that means.
Was he a listener?
No, it was a guy. I was at a party.
You're a ham
and
egger.
And this guy just did not like me, you know?
You are a ham and egger, sir.
And so it took me a little while to understand the insult. I was like, all right, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I do. I enjoy that.
I love ham and eggs, man. Yeah. Thank you. How'd you know that?
Did you ever find out what that meant to him?
Well, yeah. Eventually, because I didn't understand the insult, I'm like, what is that? And then he got in my face and he goes, you know, I don't think
you like ham and eggs.
You're a jerk.
Oh, playing with yourself.
That's okay. All right. Okay.
But he got in my face about it. I was like, oh, you want to fight me. Okay. I'm going to leave the party now.
Did you say that?
What, I left. I left like 5 minutes later.
What prompted the altercation?
Yeah, it's a long story.
Had you traveled back in time?
No. We were at a... I was at a Shore House once, and they were playing like techno music. And,
don't you disrespect me.
And he was upstairs, and yeah. I didn't like the music, so I just turned it off, and that set it
off.
And
that's what he called you? A
ham and egg.
That's why he started hating me, and then this altercation happened a couple of months later.
Well, he sounds like he's the ham and egg.
That's all right. We were young.
Yeah. Let me go to Michael, wants to give us one in Italian. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Hi, good morning. How are you? You disgraziato molto la famiglia.
Ah, and sounds good. That?
And that is, you're a disgrace and you're not fit for a dog. I have a few others if you want one in Tagalog.
But Michael, meaning you're not fit for a dog, meaning you're not fit to, like, sleep with a dog, have sex with a dog or something?
You're just not.
You're not.
You just aren't worthy of anything. You're,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. What's another one?
This one is, your mother is a whore. I hope that's okay to say on radio.
Yeah.
Okay. This is Filipino Tagalog. This is Putanginan Mo.
Okay.
Okay, and the riff off the other Greek one where he said "buso." If you say "buso glifty," you're adding the word "sucker" at the end of it.
Oh,
a hole sucker.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I got it. Cool. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. Bye bye.
Appreciate it, man. Here's a couple other good ones. Here's a this is a stupid one. This is German. It's Schattenparker.
Schattenparker.
Yeah.
And you're too late.
One who parks in the shade.
That's
that
it.
Mean? Yeah.
That's the best Germans can do?
No, there's probably more.
There's got to be.
It started World War II. Come on.
There's got to be a meaning behind that we don't know
yes,
about.
Yes, I agree.
You park in the shade.
Here's Jamaican one. Bombaclat.
Bombaclat.
Literally means an ass wipe.
Oh.
Bombaclat.
Well, that's direct.
Yeah.
You're an ass wipe.
What about the word jabroni? Is that actually an English word?
I don't know. The first time I heard jabroni was from The Rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a good one, an Albanian one. Te kifsha te bardet I sjev, which means F your eye whites.
The whites of your eyes?
Or F your eye. Yeah, I guess so.
F your white.
I got to give them points for creativity.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's not where I would target.
Yeah. Let's see. All right. This is a Turkish one.
All right.
Sana girsin keman yayi, which means may the bow of a violin enter your anus.
You know, it's at once classy and disgusting.
Yeah.
May the bow of a...
Sorry, I snorted.
...of a violin enter your anus.
I like that. Here's a good one. In Persian, miguzam rengesh khan, which means try to paint my fart.
Try to paint my fart.
Uh-huh.
That's actually beautiful.
It is. It's another way.
Try to paint my fart.
It says
sounds like a Carol King song.
It says, or less literally, F off.
Oh.
So,
well, just
I mean,
say F off.
Yeah, I know, but the literal translation is try to paint my fart.
It's like trying to paint a fart.
I feel the earth move on the
moon. Well, Carol King by...
A paint in my fart. A paint in my fart. Paint in my fart. Paint in my fart. A paint in my fart.
Here's a Japanese insult. Have you got any
Japanese have a whole bunch of very interesting insults.
Hesomagari.
Hesomagari.
Yeah. Which means twisted belly button.
You have a twisted belly button. Yes, I did. Talk to the hand. You have a twisted belly button. Don't slam the paper door on the way out.
That's what I got it.
You have a twisted belly button.
The hell does that mean?
I don't know. It says here, actually, some of these do have exclamations. It says, basically, you're a sick puppy. You're bizarre.
Your nipples look like snow caps. Yeah, I said it.
What?
I like the yeah, I said it.
You're right, mister.
I dared to say it.
It's now time to get real.
Here's
you have a twisted belly button.
Here's a Gaelic one.
Irish curses are the best. But now I'm starting to think Japanese might be up there.
Gonith and Katu is Gonith on Dabal on Kat.
Isn't that Elven?
No, but it means may the cat eat you and may the devil then eat the cat.
Oh, snap. Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
May the cat eat you and then may the devil eat the cat.
Yeah, that's basically
may
what...
the dog eat the cat that eat the devil.
Yeah.
E-I-E-I-O.
Then it says it's not clear why the cat has to be involved here. Exactly. Like, why doesn't the devil just eat you?
Just cut to the chase.
Yeah. I don't know. Let me go to Julie. Hi, Julie. Good morning.
Yes, hi. My grandfather used to have better Yiddish curses than that one. He used to say, Gekaken Afen Yam.
Okay.
Which means go F in your head.
Go poop on your head?
Huh.
Okay. On your own head?
Gekaken Afen Yam. Go poop on the head.
Poop on your own head, yeah. Which I assume you'd have to get some sort of bowl or something.
Sure.
Make or maybe husband. I poop on your head.
Or I poop on your head.
I poop on you.
I'd like to poop on
your
head.
Or and a schmutzig puppet is a dirty belly button.
Wow. See, what's again with the belly button thing?
Yeah, exactly right.
You said it.
Yeah. Thanks for ripping us off.
All right.
Does it have to do with like a connection to the mother? Like, is it a roundabout way of insulting your mom?
You were a wizened little creature. Your belly button was twisted and you could poop on your own head.
Let me go to Erica. Hey, Erica, good morning.
Good morning.
What's up, Erica?
My father used to insult my mother's ex-husband by calling him, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. It's German, but it's called a Hebehofer.
Hebehofer?
Maybe.
Okay.
And it's when they breed horses, it's the person who holds.
Oh, the horse's junk?
Right.
Oh. Okay. All right. But that's a legitimate job. Somebody's got to do that.
Yeah.
And now it's an insult.
You hold your horse's a penis.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
All right, thank you, Erica.
That's got to be a terrible job.
Painting your fault.
Holding the horse penis?
Well, just in general, when you have to artificially...
Just getting its pants off.
...do that, because I was watching this documentary called Blackfish, and there are people who take this bull whale, and they have to do that to him until he creates the batter.
Yeah.
Wow. How about the dude that's got to wear like a plastic sleeve, and do some checking of a horse's colon or something?
How about
like
the dude who has to dance seductively for the horse to get it aroused?
That's a tough gig.
The dude has to twerk for the horse.
You got
to
be comfortable with your own sexuality.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Who's he, daddy?
That dude gets aroused.
It's a Japanese guy.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
He's into Asians.
Yeah, paint your fat.
The horse. The horse is into Asian men.
What?
The horse is into Asian men. I would have never made that connection.
All right. Here's a Dutch insult. It's Vogesetchen Palingvel.
May your wooden shoes get termites?
No. Eel skin full of crap.
What is that?
You're calling someone an eel skin full of crap.
Okay.
I kind of like that. That's creative.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Oh, here we go. This is a Romanian insult. Suflati ascu, curul in linguar cande arde ciobara la gura.
That's a long one.
It says, I can blow farts in your spoon when the soup is too hot.
I can blow farts in your spoon.
There are, we don't use the fart as an insult as much as other countries do.
No.
For us, it's a self-expression.
Yeah. It's a little more fun than insulting.
They, it's like the throwing of the shoes in Iran, and that's an insult, something we wouldn't register. So apparently, where we consider the fart more self-expression, it's an insult. It's a weapon in other countries.
You know, and I was, while continuing to be in my funk, as I was yesterday, I something irritated me. I said the word mother effer out loud. Yeah. I was alone. I was just, cursing just for the sake of cursing. And I actually stopped and analyzed that word for a moment and why it has so much impact.
Oh, yeah.
And why it's
heavy.
It's the default, I'm really pissed off word to go to.
It is my default. It is my most uttered expletive.
Yeah.
And I think because it has such an aggressive... Now, if you wanted to go hardcore, you could go to the C word, but the C word has no... It seems to be floating. It's not tethered to anything.
It's only one syllable, too. Yeah. It's not... That's like...
You can't go, mother!
Right, exactly.
Boom. It's like...
Yeah, I feel like that's worse than right. the C word.
It's like you walk into the theater and the curtain's already up.
Or it makes you feel better.
Like, okay, so the S word is, since it's one syllable, it's quick. It's like something happened that you didn't like, or you hurt yourself, and it's just like, bang, one reaction, S, you know? And the C word is calling someone else.
Someone else, yeah.
Yeah, which would be really quick, too. But if you really want to get a taste for cursing, mother effer.
Mother effer is it. Now, if you
four
want to
boom.
Bring it to another level, C, S-er, mother effer.
I mean, if what? You're a professional, C-sucker, mother.
Oh, C-sucker. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I could see that, too.
Because it rhymes, you know what I mean?
There's a bit of alliteration to
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Here's another one, an Italian insult. And this one's pretty creative. I like this one. It's cacati in mano e prenditi a schiaffi.
What did you just say to me?
Take a dump in your hand and then slap yourself.
I like that.
That's
I like
good,
that.
Right?
Take a dump in your hand and slap funny. Yourself. Yeah.
You know, so you can poop all over your face.
It's like a Home Alone.
I like
better with your poop in your hands.
Hang on, let me go to Nick. Hey Nick, how you doing?
Hey, not bad.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, a couple. my grandmom used to yell at us all the time in Norwegian, and it's Yoslada Sasia Vestavagen, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but it means I'll slap you so hard you'll stick to the wall.
I'll slap you so hard you'll stick to the wall.
Yeah.
Benign, but more violent than disgusting. It's not like painting a fart.
If I'm really pushed to the edge, I'll tell my kids I'll put you through a wall.
Yeah.
I like that.
How many times you pull that one? That's got to be last resort,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's not very often.
So it's when they get home from school.
Yeah.
What are you coming home for?
Here is a Hindi insult. Chapakli ke gand ke pazin, which means sweat of a lizard's ass.
Sweat of a lizard's ass.
That sounds like that's something out of
Three Amigos.
Three Amigos, yes.
Or Hocus Pocus with witches. Sweat of a lizard's ass.
What were the insults?
Son of a motherless goat.
Yeah, and...
You dirt-eating swine, is it?
And then there's one from Coming to America, you sweat from a baboon's bowl.
Yeah.
This is a pretty good one, too. Let me go to Lindsay. Hi, Lindsay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up,
you
Lindsay?
Rock.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's going on?
So, two things. First, my insult, it's Polish.
Okay.
Dupa ranne puszki, and it means may your ass sprout boils in your sleep.
Okay. May your ass sprout boils in your sleep. That is an effective yeah. insult. You're actually...
I'd be scared.
You're actually cursing someone. You're hoping...
True.
May your ass...
I've never seen... the movie Roommates is actually where I learned it. It's an old movie. I think it was in it's not old, in the 80s or 90s.
Right.
And this old guy is kind of forced to live with his son or grandson.
So we don't know if it was created specifically for the movie or if it's an actual curse.
Right. I think it is. So I'm actually Polish. My maiden name is Marczynski, and I ran it by my grandfather, and he approved.
He approved it? My father, not that this is Polish, but my father used to say, you're as useless as a T-word for breast on a banana.
Okay.
Oh, my. Your dad was so sweet.
He was a doll.
That's funny.
You're as useless as a tea on a banana.
As tea on a banana. I like that. But, Steve, this last one that she had, that's what you
that's
pointed out. That's a curse.
Yeah.
That is, I am trying to will this to happen to you.
Right.
By the, you know, the powers of the universe
Grayskull.
Or whatever. The power of Grayskull.
I have the power.
To put boils on your
you
ass.
You put boils on my ass, He-Man.
The Maloika, right? I mean, that's what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that the Maloika? Like this?
Yeah.
What are you doing? It's a Maloika.
Hang on. Lisa has the answer to why cats are used in curses, Kathy.
Interesting.
Hi, Lisa. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's up, Kat? Or at least, sorry. I'm going to fall. Don't mind me. Go ahead.
So. cats are seen as a portal to demons or the devils. So actually, during the burning times, they used to put them in wooden crates and burn them with the witches.
Oh, that's terrible.
Cats were
burning times.
It's funny, though. The burning times. Do you remember the burning times?
Sitcom?
It's actually a newspaper. Oh. I get it. The burning times.
Interesting.
Cats. Why aren't there any? Cats were revered in Egyptian culture.
Yep. Right.
And but there was also the belief, I guess, that witches used cats as familiars. Mm. So there was a malevolent thing to cats as well.
Here's a good one. This is Afrikaans.
Oh, sure. Yeah. South
and
Africa.
Then they're Afrikaans.
In South Africa?
Yeah. Afrikaan and Afrikaant. Yeah. Okay. It's Afrikaans. It's like a Dutch.
Delicious.
Okay. Well, this insult is Equens Ju Vingers.
Horse.
Verander in Vijuke and Ju Bale Bing Tijunk.
Oh, my God.
And this is a great insult.
Is there a horse in there? Was that
this
right?
This is a great insult. It says, I hope your fingers change into fishing hooks and you get an itch on your balls.
I got that wrong.
That's a good one.
I hope your fingers change into fishing hooks. And that's a curse as well.
I like that.
I'm going to ask my friend about that one. He speaks Afrikaans. I'm going to ask him if they
use
that.
You have a friend who speaks Afrikaans?
Yeah, you guys have met him before. Mike. He's okay.
Afrikaan Mike.
We do. That's what we call him, South African Mike.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. That's inventive. You thought up a man of, so there's a transformation that takes place, and then the result.
Yeah, somebody said that one time, and it took off.
People I like that. Ooh, Can I use that? Sure.
Here, I just have two more left.
Because all I have is painting farts, and it's getting old.
Here's a Bulgarian insult. Grozna si kato salata, which means you are as ugly as salad.
Yeah, I've seen some ugly salads.
And then the last one, this is actually a good one, an Australian insult. And it's in English.
Okay.
But it says, may your ears turn into arse.
You can say that.
And poop on your shoulders.
May your, okay. Yeah, I like that.
There you go. Those are some international insults for you to go forth in your day.
Did that pep you up some?
And use. Yeah, actually, I feel a little better now.
Yeah, putting other people down.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, in times when you feel lowest, turn to the instant messages. They'll pep you up.
Hey, Nick, did you, I saw you were looking up the origin of jabroni. Does it have any?
Oh, yeah, it was a derivation of an Italian word, jaboni, which means a naive person, an immigrant, a hoodlum. But it became popular, Steve, because of The Rock.
Okay.
All right.
Was he misstating it? Was he missaying it?
I think it's just a
a variation?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So just kind of a an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, moron. When you were saying The Rock, I thought you were talking about the movie.
Yes, about the Alcatraz.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to the
You're jabroni. Sean Connery. Right. Here's what I need. About 40 jabronis. To come with me to Alcatraz.
I think we should take a quick break.
Yes.
And come back in just a moment. Stay with us.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Grilling season is here, and they have done it again at Omaha Steaks. This is the one and only deal that you can get. It is the Omaha Steaks Grill Ready Collection, a limited time for only $39.99. You heard that right. $39.99 is 80% off, and here's what you get. 2 tender filet mignons, 2 beefy top sirloins, 4 juicy boneless pork chops, 4 boneless chicken breasts, 4 all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, 4 traditional kielbasa sausages, 4 award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and for this deal, you get 4 made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets for free. Did you hear all of that? You get, it's for $39.99. And what's wonderful about this is you're not going to have to stop off at the store on the way home. It's already going to be there ready to go. This limited time package for only $39.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, and add the Grill Ready Collection to your cart. Don't wait. You want to get this offer soon for summertime. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, grab your friends, and fire up the grill.
Are you ready for love? If so, Steven makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Steven Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStevenSinger.com.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand and Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand and Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit handandstone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Case, am I playing this right here?
Oh, very nice.
You know what? We met this guy a couple weeks ago at our Painfully Single Mixer, Bluebell. His buddy Chris was trying so hard to get him hooked up with somebody. And so he came to us personally, and we said, yeah, you know what? We'll give this a run. We like this guy. He's 26 years old.
We knew we had some resource here maybe to help him out.
And his buddy Chris wants to get him some loving. So we said, hell yeah, we'll help out. It's John the Virgin, everybody.
Yeah! There we go.
How you doing, John?
Pretty well.
Come on, man.
Hey, he just gave a yay.
Yeah.
Yay. It's more than we saw.
I heard a yay.
Control yourself, mate.
Yeah. He's a little bit shy. And there was no one we could think of, no one on this planet that we could think of that would be better for helping this guy out than the gentleman that we have here in our studio. I mean, as I've said several times this morning, the guy pulls no punches.
He doesn't.
Gives it to you straight.
We wanted someone who was going to tell him the real deal.
Absolutely.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a match.
So please welcome from VH1's Tough Love, Mr. Steve Wolf.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Steve. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
I've seen you all over the place. You're like the go-to guy for this stuff now.
Yeah, yeah. I'm giving a lot of advice. I'm actually doing a lot of celebrity matchmaking now.
What season is this again?
We're on Tough Love Couples now, so it's our third cycle.
Right, of the couples, yeah. And I like the couple dynamic. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's good. Next week.
I like when the couples really stink.
What is going on?
You got these real smelly couples on your show, don't you?
He's a huge Skinner fan.
In Casey's defense, the sound effect unit that he went to, he hit the wrong button, and then it froze.
That's what she said.
And it's still playing. He meant to hit Nick saying, yeah, couple.
A couple. Yeah. Oh, okay. But,
so, anyhow.
Well, you know.
Yeah, a couple.
There you go.
Well worth the wait.
Yeah. So, Preston, I'm sorry, Nick.
I'm sorry, Steve. Steve Ward, can you say what you're doing on Thursday night?
Thursday night. Yeah, I'm actually doing a Jimmy Fallon show on Thursday night.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, for the third time in Fox Business and all kinds of stuff. So I'm out there trying to get a bunch of people for our wedding finale is actually next week. I marry two of the couples on my show. I'm an ordained minister now, too. So.
Oh, Universal Life Church of Modesto, California?
You got it.
You're a brother then. We are clergy members.
Outstanding.
Did you spend the $50 for the marriage certificate package?
Oh, I got. You should see my mom because she got it too.
Yeah.
And she's got the decal in her car, so she like parks wherever
she's
she wants.
She's clergy? She uses that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
Oh, I didn't have the balls to use that.
100%.
Oh, man.
100%.
I tell you what, though. Did you pay? You paid for the card, right?
Of course, yeah, $25.
It's awesome. Yeah,
I got the little black one with the gold writing.
Hey, Steve, wait, because you can't marry them in PA, right?
I did it in California, in San Diego.
There you go.
Look at his
card. You got a better card than I got.
Oh yeah, it's nice.
I don't have an Ami.
Yeah, I carry mine with me at all times.
All right, just in case.
Get out of speeding tickets and
or last rites if you have to give.
I'm on my way to a funeral. Get out of my way,
Steve. By the way, now you said you're hooking up celebs these days.
Well, I mean, I am. There's several that I'm friends with I'm working with that are just like, hey, if you happen to know someone. But my client list is strictly confidential.
Sure.
But no, I work with several friends of mine, like Craig Robinson, Terrell Owens. Those guys are buddies of mine. And
right, right.
I'm like, I mean, these guys get women very easily.
What are they coming to you for?
They're not coming
to
me. But I want to be the one to be like, yep, I set him up with that girl.
What type of guy is Terrell Owens into?
You know
that's the story.
No, man.
You're here to say no?
As far as I can tell, he does very well with women.
Nice,
he really does not have much trouble in that department.
Yeah.
Greg Robinson is hilarious. We've had him in the studio a couple of times. He's a really, really funny guy. Yep. Same question. What kind of guy is he into?
No, he's that guy pulls amazing women, too, actually. I hung out with him at the Playboy Mansion and the Maxim Hot 100 party last week.
I figured he'd be hanging around those.
Just women fly to him.
Sure, man. Yeah.
When last time he was at Helium, some of the girls, and you're looking at our calendar, some of the girls from the calendar went and spent some time with him at the show. Yeah. Said he's a really cool guy.
Oh, he's hilarious.
But likes the ladies.
He's the office, and he's got the Last Comic Standing. He's the new host.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he was
in Zach and Miri's Make a Porno.
Yeah.
I just saw that, and dumb movie, but there are some great lines in that movie.
Oh, he's hilarious. He's also hosting the VH VH1 Hip Hop Honor Awards. Yeah,
cool.
So that's he's working.
So you're working with top notch people who don't have trouble getting a girl. And obviously, you started giving kind of these schlubs on VH1, an idea of how to improve their game.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't had a chance to talk to John yet, have you?
No, actually, okay. I have.
Okay.
I got to know the guy. He's really not as awkward as I would have thought he is.
Well, yeah, Steve, let me ask you a question. Have you, in your time doing this, have you met, people who are older virgins and have issues?
Yeah, okay. I have, actually. I was telling John, I gave a speech at Slippery Rock about a month ago, and it was in a room full of like 800 people, and this guy who's 21-year-old virgin, I mean, it's not 26, but he got up in front of the room full of women, mostly women, and said, look, I'm a virgin. I'm having a hard time, meeting women and getting over the hump and talking to them and feeling comfortable being a virgin. Can you help me out with it? And I gave him some advice that the women really appreciated in the room. I mean, first of all, we live in a society now where you can catch an STD like you can catch a cold. It's people are just completely out of control now. No one takes precautions as much as they should. And so women are rightfully very afraid of contracting something or, possibly, getting hooked up with a guy who may be sleeping with multiple women or putting them at risk.
Yeah.
You're not going to run into that with John here. I mean, the first thing I say is, first of all, be confident with the fact that, okay, one, you're STD free. You're this lump of clay who these women can mold into the form or the sculpture of their wishes.
Steve, do you think that appeals to a woman? That because Preston was saying, when we first threw it out at the mixer, do we have any women here who'd like to be the one to give John his first experience? Do you think that's an intriguing thing for women?
I don't think the novelty is there as much as it is for men.
Right, the other way?
The other way around, but on the other side of the coin, there's a lot of guys who end up, developing habits, or their way of doing things, and that may not work for a lot of women.
Sure.
If he meets a woman who, has her own way of doing things and she communicates that to him effectively and he learns how to please her, well, that's the only way he's going to know how to do it.
So first piece of advice would be to own your virginity.
Exactly.
And actually use it as a banner.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wear like a badge of honor. I mean,
right.
be confident, first of all. And that's the most important thing. I think, women really admire a guy who's confident and honest. So you're kind of accomplishing those two things right off the bat.
Now, do you think confidence comes in the form of a sketchbook full of cars you've drawn?
Dude.
I'm just asking.
Let's talk about first impressions, okay? So I had no idea what he looked like. I got called to be a part of this, and I was really flattered that I was called. And John walks into the room, and no offense, but he's kind of disheveled.
Yeah.
Didn't really bother putting any product in your hair or, combing it or doing anything like that. Your pants are pretty dirty.
Yeah.
I would have put on some clean clothes.
Sure.
What I mean?
It's presentation.
It's presentation.
Right.
First impressions are very important. And whether a woman even realizes this or not, subconsciously, she's going to realize this about you just by looking at you, which gives that indication that you're not together or you're not a clean person or you don't, put an emphasis on hygiene or something like that.
You're not saying like $1,000 suits. You're just saying put together a look.
You could have wore what he's wearing now if you washed it first. That's the first.
Well, he's agreeing with you, Steve. He's definitely.
Yeah.
No, John is. He's going along on this.
Yeah. And he's a good sport. Yeah. I like him. We talked a little bit about where he comes from and what his lifestyle consists of. You guys may not know this. He was just certified to become a bartender.
Did not know that.
Yes. That's great.
Wow.
He's going to put himself out there and start socializing more and put himself in a place to meet women.
Well, Steve. The question I guess a lot of people were asking is if you have someone who seems to be, and John, you seem to be on a basic level, fairly shy. You agree that's the issue. How do you build up that confidence? What do you do for yourself to make yourself confident outwardly?
Well, the first thing you need to do is focus on what it is that you're already confident about. So I asked them earlier, what is it that you're most passionate about? And he mentioned the drawing.
Yeah.
So, there's a community of artists, anywhere you pretty much go where you can find other people that have an interest in doing the same sort of thing, whether it's sketching, drawing, painting,
right,
anything like that. And you kind of find your niche there. And that way, if he can approach a young lady who, may be in an art class, you know, or something, or maybe in a museum or somewhere where, you know, he has some familiarity on the subject that they could both talk about, then he should be able to approach her and at least start talking about something that's easy to talk about.
Doesn't that make sense, John? I mean, if you were to take like art classes or something, or try, or even go to, at the, like, I've seen some of your stuff. It has a good comic book edge to it too. To some extent,
yeah.
Not unless you're going back to the classic Van Gogh car pictures.
No.
I'm saying it does have a comic book. And he's good. Mm-hmm. He's good.
Yeah, I believe it because obviously he spends a lot of time by himself and probably draws a lot.
There's a question I have for you, Steve, because an observation I've picked up on John is when you ask him a direct question, it seems that there's like a beat or two pause before he will answer the question.
Right.
And John, is that because you're thinking about maybe what the right answer is, or
be safe what to say, not just say something that's going to be.
You may just want to go for it.
And you know what, Preston? That's very intuitive. Actually, I asked him how old his brother is earlier.
Yeah.
And he goes, in his 30s. I'm like, do you know how old? He's like, 31, 32.
Yeah.
I'm like, do you know his birthday? He's like, yeah. I go, month, day, year. He's like, yeah. I go, so how old is he? You know, so yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the, I see sure. where you're going with that, Preston. Yeah, and yeah, you got to have, you know, more assertiveness in your responses and be willing to put yourself out there, even if it's the wrong answer, say something.
What's a drill to do that, Steve? How does a guy who does have some stuff going on and, mm-hmm. and could converse on top, he's not a dummy by any stretch of the imagination, mm-hmm. how would... What could he do to brush that up a little bit?
Well, the first thing he should do is at least get comfortable talking, you know, among guys.
Right.
First,
yeah.
First, you know, so at least the notion of sex or hooking up with a girl isn't even a threat right. whatsoever. So it seems like, I mean, you got to give him some credit for coming on the radio
sure.
and putting his business out there.
Yeah, yeah.
So I applaud him for that. Obviously, he's got the courage to put himself out there. I just. Like you said, I just don't think he knows any better.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn by doing. And so you need to start experiencing meeting women, meeting other people, getting out there, talking openly, and putting your opinion out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you got an opinion on anything?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a few opinions, right?
Yeah. Some.
Man. I just wish so many things for you, John.
Well, let's also talk about some positives here.
Okay, right. Give us the positives. Okay. Always good to start from a place right. of affirmation.
Wait, you want to say something?
I would draw and would just talk about the drawings that I'm doing. And just
do you see a feasibility to like being with girls who are perhaps into art at an art class or an art as Steve said a museum or some place where you might be able to share your common like and speak passionately to it?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Here's one thing I have to point out, which is really important, and this is especially important in the first impression stage. You have to ask questions.
Yes.
You know, women like to talk, and they like it when a guy is curious about them. So you need to ask them things that they would enjoy talking about. That isn't going to be too invasive.
Well, and isn't that a great way to almost get around having to talk? It mm-hmm. is just even I know a girl who is not very good with guys, and all so. If she does want to talk to them, all she does is ask them questions. She will ask 50 questions. Now, it may get annoying, but if she doesn't have anything to say or can't think of anything to say because she's a little bit shy, all she does is ask them questions, and they just keep talking, and they wound up, she'll spend a couple of hours with a guy just asking questions and listening to what he has to say about it.
Yeah, well, and when it's a guy talking to a girl and it's a guy asking a girl questions, usually the girl's more flattered. Because he seems so curious and interested and that sort of thing.
I would agree wholeheartedly. Guys do not realize that one of the things that really is part of a conversation is also asking questions.
Yeah.
Instead of giving a dissertation.
Well, and this is what tends to happen. And once he finally gets to, rounding third and coming into home plate, he may run into the same issue, he's running into now with, when it comes to just connecting with the ball. And that is, you don't want to get too excited or get overly zealous about it because then you're bound to screw it up. So that's why taking a step back, asking them questions and doing some reconnaissance, kind of letting them volunteer some information that you can then process and use somehow. Like Preston commented on how you seem to almost absorb the question and take a moment before you respond.
Yeah.
Well, you can maybe use that as an opportunity to think of something thoughtful to say or meaningful to do. that would maybe impress a woman, like, you know, opening the door or offering them something, you know, and being thoughtful. And that's very, goes a long way.
If what would you say to, obviously, you know, Kathy from the show and everything, but what would you say, you know, if you wanted to do talk about art or try to bring Kathy into a conversation about art or ask her a question, what might come to mind initially?
Well, hold on. You can't just throw him out there like that. You know, he's got to start with an icebreaker.
Okay, which an icebreaker.
You can't just start with a random conversation like, hi, do you like to draw?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so you need some kind of an icebreaker.
Which he did, by the way.
Which he's done,
he's
done, yeah.
At the mixer, we had a girl call, and that was his opening line was, do you like art?
Steve's advice, an icebreaker. What would you pick as an icebreaker?
A compliment. Pay her a compliment. Okay, even if you didn't even hear the person who called in, you could have said, you sound like you have a nice voice. You know, pay her a compliment.
Kathy. Nice dress. Well,
listen,
that's a nice room.
It's hard in this room, all right?
Yes, because you're being watched by a whole bunch of people. But I think what you were trying to imply is nice dress, now get into the ditch.
I have to agree with you, John, because I think her rounds were not nice. Yeah.
Listen. No. Honestly, you could do something as easy as, hey, those are great shoes. Where did you get those? Because honestly, it's my mom's birthday coming up. I was going to get something for her.
It could be anything.
That's a great way to jump in. It could be anything.
You know, you dress just like my mom.
I want to have sex with my mom.
If I was trying to pick up Kathy,
because I really want to have sex with my mom.
I'm so in love with my mom.
If I was trying to pick up Kathy.
I drew her this car.
Stop. Oh, we're so weird.
Sorry, Steve. Go ahead. Do you like the size of my knife?
John isn't laughing at all.
No.
I know.
If I was picking up Kathy, for example, the first thing I would notice is, you know, you have a really great smile.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let's go have sex, Steve.
Wow. Done deal. See how it works, John?
Yo,
did you bring rubbers with you?
But what about complimenting something that you actually don't agree with? Like, if you don't like a dress, don't say nice dress, right?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So you kind of find something. So I would say, nice headphones.
Yeah. I hate you. Yeah. I want to sleep with you. Yeah.
John, what would you pick and be more forceful?
Like, she has beautiful skin. Yeah. And a nice eye.
It would make a great coat.
What'd you say?
It would make a great coat. Yeah.
As Kathy darts across the room,
when I cross my legs, my penis disappears.
But that was way more confident. I mean, there was really confident
that was,
right there.
John, that was very confident.
But you're exactly right. The forcefulness indicated you actually believe that.
And I think that you could follow that up with a question. You have great skin. Do you use any product on
that? Lotion.
Yeah. Would you like some lotion?
Because I'll lower it down to you in a pit.
Could you get your dog to stop barking? There's an FBI agent at the front door. Oh, those are death's head moths.
Now can we have sex?
I'll lower down some food if you agree to that.
Okay. I swear, John, within this, is there are little nuggets and things that you can use?
I think Steve Ward made a good point, which is really think about just your regular conversations with anybody. Don't overthink about the fact that it's a conversation with a girl. Just think about having a normal conversation
Oh, my God. This is a song.
And then from Silence of the Lambs.
He's dancing to it.
He's tucking himself in.
He was dancing. I think he might have tucked.
Wait, okay. But then the next step is make a suggestion. Okay? Make a suggestion.
Fix yourself up.
Where you would say, like, you know, we should go out sometime or we should get a cup of coffee. Or you should give me your number.
Do you think, Steve, it's obviously on a case per case situation. Mm-hmm. Obviously if he met
him to a movie would be over.
Well, see, that's now.
But you're thinking.
You're thinking. If you wanted to invite a girl to a movie, that's great. If you say, you know, would you like to go to a movie sometime? That's very non-threatening. But I don't recommend that as a first date because you're just not going to talk to her.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go somewhere where you can talk and get to know the person. So like I said,
face to face.
But not only that, it's
lunch, coffee.
And I prefer to frame it as more of a suggestion rather than a question.
Right.
You know, so it's
great.
So that she shows you can meet her willingness or interest.
Right. Like we should go out and get a bite to eat sometime.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're just tuning in, Steve Ward from VH1's Tough Love and premiering tonight, you said, right?
The eighth episode premieres tonight.
With John the Virgin. I got a caller here. Cindy has an interesting suggestion. Hey, Cindy, how you doing?
Hi. You guys are awesome. I listen to you every morning on my way to school.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
But I was just calling to say, if you're in the area and you're in Philly, there's actually an art mixer coming up. It's a bunch of artists and crafters that are local in Philly. So
wow.
About an art mixer.
About how many people attend that, Cindy? Do you know?
Last year there was close to like 300-400 people there.
Oh,
dude,
that's
great.
That's John. Perfect. Do you know when that is, Cindy?
It's June 12th and 13th from like 1 to 6 in the afternoon.
That's perfect.
It's at the Crane Arts Building. It's pretty much like a bunch of crafters and artists and stuff get together, and they have like a little, there's food there. You can get like a little lunch or whatever, and a lot of people are there like selling their stuff or whatever.
Well,
like,
John, at that event, you could go up to her, could I get you can I get you a cup of coffee or something? You know, you have a little bit more of an entree, and you have the whole art thing to base on.
Not only that,
hang on. I'm going to get that info from her. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, President. Yeah. And not only that, though, but if especially if somebody's exhibiting, you know, it'd be very easy to make a comment on their work.
Right.
And be like, you know, that's
one of the artists.
Yeah. And getting to know somebody and learning something new is very synonymous. It's like when you first meet somebody, maybe, you know, you like to draw, maybe you've never painted before, but you're at an exhibit like this, you notice somebody else's, you know, work, and
I've
you say,
watercolors.
You know, yeah. Okay, there you go. Yeah. So, you know, I've dabbled, you know, that's really interesting. I've dabbled in watercolors. You know, tell me a little bit more. You know, tell me about this medium. And that might be a way to open a conversation as well.
Well, okay. So you have something like that. Well, you know, obviously, you're going to need to be a little more enthusiastic, too. With the way you're delivering, I think he shoots himself
in the
foot.
That's very important. Yeah. That's one thing I can comment on. Everybody in this room is high energy. You got a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
That definitely is important.
We project our voices.
And
we can work on that with John. Well, listen, I want to take a break. We want to come back. So we do have something planned for John, and we want to make sure that we spell that out of what's going on here with Steve, and we have some other people helping us out.
We're going to take him to the next level.
We're going
to
do our best.
Steve is obviously the guru here.
Absolutely.
And then we'll try some other stuff.
All right. We're going to come back in just a moment, so stay right there.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Royal Blood.
I only lie when I love you.
Nathaniel Rateliff in the Night Sweats.
I wanna leave it all out there and dry.
Tom Kiefer featuring Lizzie Hale.
New music. More of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Give me a timpani roll, Casey, because it was about a month or so ago that we had a painfully single mixer. While at the mixer, a guy came up to us and said, hey, you need to help my friend out. You need to help him out. He's 27 years old, has never had the love of a woman before. His name is John. We have since named him John the Virgin.
We're very clever.
We tried that.
So creative.
We tried that night, our best to hook him up with somebody to no avail. And we really liked him, and we felt that we should go to the airwaves and try and work things out. And ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement that I jumped up and down.
Like a little girl.
When I heard this morning, John the Virgin is now a man!
Yeah!
That is right.
Look at everyone's face in the studio. They're all smiling.
Everybody's so happy.
He knows what sex is.
You know what? We need to carry him out like Rudy off of the field.
Yeah. Rudy!
It was,
you're naughty.
Man. And we have to thank the girl who stepped up and called in and said she would indeed deflower this gentleman, and it has happened. I'm so...
Well,
I feel like it's my... You know?
I was thinking about it all last night. Jessica's a knockout. And the whole... Kathy, you said you had the same thing. You're wondering how things were going.
Oh, yeah, I think all of
us... Had the crying started yet? Were the cops there?
Yeah, wow. Well, I think all of us were wondering, you know, how it went.
Yeah.
I was texting Nick last night. I said, dude, as soon as you find out,
let me know.
And ladies and gentlemen, John is here with us this morning.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for that evening. And I do feel I'm a man now.
No, how you doing, John?
Good. Very good.
Very good. John is very shy, and he is, I tell you what, though, man, either he's getting used to us or last night was magic, because he's already been kind of joking around
came
a little bit.
In.
And he's, he came skipping in, and, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
How do you feel? How do you feel today?
Really good.
Really good.
You know what? We knew that John, it wasn't a case where John was just like this freaky, creepy dude. You know, we knew there was, a good dude in there.
Do you remember?
Just needed to be brushed up a bit.
You guys remember how cool the first time was? You remember that?
No, it's terrible.
Yeah. You don't even talk to the guy anymore.
Hold on, Nick, was it your first time set up, too?
Sort of.
You've told that on the air before?
Yours was terrible?
Well, you were set up, right?
I have no idea who she is.
When it was going on.
The next day when I'm smiling, you can't stop smiling. Yeah.
This feels so much better than
all of that was great.
I mean,
because. Really, in the moment when it happens, it's like, this is what they've been talking about!
Right, huh? Exactly. And you break out into song.
We did it! We did it! We did it! Yay! Elisima, we did it!
Well, who do you want to talk to first?
Everybody!
Let's talk to the wonderful woman who ushered him into manhood.
Okay, let's get on the line. Hello,
Hi.
How you doing today?
I'm fine, and you?
We're doing just fine. Well, listen, just to set the stage a little bit, we had planned to send them out to dinner. We had things all set up, and we were going to make a full evening out of it, and then eventually it was going to lead to the romance part
of
it. But got in touch with Nick and said, nope, let's get to the nitty-gritty, right?
Yeah, they didn't want to do the whole date and everything set up ahead of time because they were sort of geographically far apart, and thanks to the Oxford Valley Mall, because they did set everything up. But we were able to get, and they were going to go to dinner out in that direction, but then we were able to get a hotel room for these guys in Center City, and called and said, listen, the date would be really nice, but I'd rather just get to it. And so let's go have a bottle of wine. Let's sit at the bar. Let's chat. Let's get to know each other a little bit, and then we'll go from there. Right. And that was a good idea.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about it. Tell us how things were.
Well, I didn't think it would be smart for us to go to Oxford Valley Mall and then drive an hour after. Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. And you could go there. You could relax in the bar, which is nice. Or did you go? Were you doing room service? How did it play out?
No, we went down to the restaurant. We had dinner and a couple of drinks, and we were talking. John actually, he wasn't really shy. He talked to me. We had a really good time. And the way that I said it in the beginning, like, we're not
naughty.
Have sex. Like, let's just have fun, get to know each other. Like, let's not make it like, oh my gosh, we have to go to sex and stuff like that. And it planned out that we both enjoyed each other's company a lot, and I tried to make it special. Like, I lit candles and everything in the room. And
wow.
You're exactly the woman that every guy hopes would be their first.
This is perfect.
I mean, that is awesome. So.
But here's the thing, because yesterday we sort of got into a little bit of an argument about and what she was doing, and this was what Angela and I were talking about. She did something nice for him, and she was trying to make it nice for him. She did go to dinner and sit and chat with him, and then she lit the candles. Like, she made it nice. Yeah. So that's what Angela was talking about.
I agree. And that was your goal, to make it the first experience a fantastic one.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I didn't want him to be uncomfortable or nervous or anything like that, and I tried my best. And he was just such a sweetheart. Like, I would have not done anything to try to force him to do it.
All right, before
he was
we go,
a really great guy.
Before we go on with more of that story, I got to go to Allison, who wanted to comment. Hey, Allison, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
When you made that announcement, I started applauding and crying.
Isn't that? You moved her to tears, John. Wow. You're happy.
Rock on,
she says, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Can I ask, and we can't get too graphic about the details, but you guys start to, you know, get into the flow of things.
Yes.
Did he seem comfortable?
He did. I was a skeptic. I actually didn't believe that he was a virgin
right.
at first.
Yeah. Okay.
It wasn't like an epic fail whatsoever.
Very cool.
It wasn't an epic fail?
No.
That's a thumbs up, John. Yeah, that's good.
I know my first time was very, very awkward.
Oh, yeah, no question. And I understand. Don't take that the wrong way, John, but usually the first time it's weird, it's awkward. Yeah. You don't know what you're doing.
It's nowhere near the target.
It's quick.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that. Was it a quick experience?
Not really.
Really?
Wait, hold on. Go ahead. What did you say?
The first time was a little quicker, but we enjoyed our night.
Wait, was it more than one time?
Yes.
Yes. All
right. How many times?
Two times.
All right. That's right out of 40-year-old virgin.
Wow.
At the end, first time lightning fast, second time around. Here we go.
Not really lightning fast. Believe it or not.
Excellent. Now, what I assume foreplay had a certain, at least a little bit of card drawing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yes. Okay.
Hey, what did you wear?
Do I have to say?
Like,
was it lingerie?
Yeah, was it lingerie.
Farmer's outfit?
Oh, yeah. I had little lacy boy shorts and like a cute little pink and black tuxedo box.
See, I'm already halfway there. Yeah. Can't believe it, John.
We're going to have to go again.
Sorry, we got to go again.
I just finished. Wow.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. There was kind of like that weird high, like, because I knew it was his first time.
Yeah.
So I was into it for that. But yeah, it wasn't bad, believe it or not.
Well, you know, that's awesome because, you know, we've said before, you are a beautiful woman, and the fact... The fact that you were as caring to make it a really good first time is what's such a home run about this.
And
the fact that at no time were EMTs involved.
Don't you wish that we could...
or the cops.
I so wish we could, and I understand why you don't want to do it, and that's fine, but I so wish we could put pictures up on the online, gang, because she's hot.
Yeah.
And for John to get a woman of her caliber for the first time.
Well, we have Cleavage Corner pics.
Is pretty damn sweet. So.
You know what, John? What were your, because this is the first time you saw her. When you met her, were you like, oh my God.
She was very beautiful when I saw her.
He's
stunned.
Yeah, man.
Very stunned.
I think he needs a towel off now.
You know, she's saying that you didn't, you know, come off as a guy who didn't know what he was doing. Did your friend Chris help you out at all?
Practice on him?
No, because I'm picturing like classic movie where, you know, best friend is trying to teach somebody, you know, how to do stuff.
No, I learned on...
Porn. Yeah. Facebook.
Wikipedia. Well, yeah, it's not like he's a child.
Yes,
you know?
No. I mean, there's
I'm
enough reference material out there.
Stuff like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what?
He got the book of Banging for Dummies.
Chris is online. You guys want to talk
to him?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Chris, how you doing, man?
Dude, you guys rock.
You know what? We're usually pretty humble about taking credit for something, but I'm really proud of ourselves this time around.
Yeah.
But we followed through. We started doing, Chris set us up, and from the very moment he told me that night at the mixer, I'm like, all right. I went into go mode.
Yeah,
I told
you
all you guys, and we made this happen.
I know.
We finished it. We did.
We should be pimps.
We did it. So what did he tell? Go ahead. What do you have to say about all this?
First and foremost, Johnny, congratulations for becoming a man, brother. Oh man, I tried to get a hold of him a couple times this morning to see how it went, and I didn't. And then right as I was getting ready to leave the yard for work, he called me, and I was like, "How'd it go?" And he's like, "Dude, we went twice."
Twice, Chris. Let me tell you something. You're a good looking guy. You have no problem talking to women.
Dude, I haven't seen. So I'm going off what Johnny said, but that's so awesome. I'm glad she wasn't, you know,
because when you first met us, you said, "Dude, anything."
Yeah,
dude. Anything. You stressed that,
and it could have been, but she's an A+. But
Schmeagle in a dress
would have been fine. John, you called me, and I had gone to sleep at this point, but you didn't leave a message. But you called at 10:50 last night. Was that right after it had happened, or hopefully a few minutes after it had happened?
Yeah.
And were you just calling to say, "I'm not a virgin anymore"?
He was that too, and.
Send up more pillows.
Get here.
Okay.
How much time in between the sessions?
Yeah, how much time?
Oh, if I can remember.
A couple hours.
What'd you guys do?
Wow.
We were just talking. We're watching TV, having a couple of drinks.
I'm almost not happier, but just as happy that they talked for a couple of hours.
That to me is a huge achievement. The mechanical aspect of having sex is awesome, obviously, but the fact that you could sit there and engage a woman in conversation, which seemed to be very difficult originally, he took to.
Did you guys kiss?
We're both into art, which is really cool.
Oh, you're into art. There you go.
Perfect. Do you draw pictures of cars too?
John's like,
well, did he bring his book of pictures?
No.
Okay. All right. He is actually a very good artist.
Did you guys kiss too, by the way?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure.
No. That's beautiful. You know what? And here's a question that's been we've been thinking about but have not dared to ask.
Yes.
Before this, John, what was the furthest you ever went with a girl? And you can use the old bases if you want to. First base being what? Making out?
Yeah. Yes.
He thinks you mean actually played baseball.
Second base, touching. Third base.
Just trusting.
Okay. That was it. Okay. Yeah. Well, you've hit the grand slam this time around, my friend.
Dude, thank you to Lauren Harris and Angela. They did a great job making them over. Awesome haircut, some nice new clothes, and I hope maybe give you a little bit of confidence going into last night as well.
Yes, they did.
Cool.
Yes, they did.
Line three, Preston, is a question that I have. We might as well let Jay ask it.
Jay, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Good, Jay. You had a question?
Yeah, I was wondering if they're going to continue this.
Did you guys talk about that?
Yes, yeah, we're going to go on a second date for a window. I mean...
You're going on a window. You're going to go window shopping.
Movie.
Is that the case? Movie. Yes. See, John is under the impression that those are just huge windows.
And we're looking outside.
We're going to get a spy on these people.
We went to this one place where all these tall blue creatures lived on the other side of the wall.
John,
they couldn't see us.
John,
it was all dark in the room.
John, you can't mess up in this room, dude. You just can't do it.
Is that true? Has a discussion been made about perhaps a second encounter? Obviously, just a date.
If it was probably after a few drinks. So I don't remember. And I'm not opposed to being his friend and hanging out again at all, but I don't remember.
Okay.
There's some good windows opening up this week.
Yeah. Some new windows.
Yeah, there's that comedy. Yeah. It's really good, Russell Brand. But anyway,
date window.
Hey, you know what? You've already stepped up and did what I perceive to be a very cool thing. And if it doesn't turn into a relationship, I think that's all right. I think that you have given this man and I can call him a man.
Yeah.
Now. A boost of confidence. There's a little spring in his step, little cream in his coffee.
Yes.
Well, not anymore.
Yeah. Now it's half and half.
But now I think the best thing is your kids are going to have the best stories on how mom and dad met.
The kids you generated last night.
How classic would that be? Was there protection involved, John?
Yes.
The hotel security.
Rufus came in and helped out. All right, you are so awesome, and we'll contact you soon because we got to do something wonderful for her too.
Yeah,
tour.
Yeah, we have a virgin female that we'd like you to meet. Next time. Have a great weekend, okay?
Thanks. You too, guys.
All right, we'll see you later. Bye bye. This is so great. Yeah! Absolutely love this. Yes. Congratulations, John.
Thank you.
You're welcome, buddy. All right, here's what I need to ask. I know we're going to come back.
Are there any more virgins?
Any more virgins?
No,
please don't.
No.
Already getting hammered with the emails from guys I'm sure are sitting in the basement with the pit ready to go.
This was one and done. We've finished this up. Congratulations. This is so awesome. We'll come back in a second. Day where you are.
Hey, podcasters, it's Kathy Romano, and I'm here to tell you that it is finally your chance to win a spot to come to Kathy's Bitch Box Party. That's right, our next Preston and Steve sorority party, which will be held on Thursday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 at Harris, Philadelphia, will be featuring the release of Kathy's Bitch Box Part 2. It's a 21 and older event. Winners and guests will each receive Kathy's Bitch Box, which is filled with some of my favorite products. Your first drink is free, plus a happy hour buffet. So I have personally handpicked these items that will go inside of the box, and I'd like to thank all of the contributors: Hey Honey, LC Boutique in Warrington, Original Drinking Buddies, True Beauty Concepts, Braided Charm, Yummy Bites, Marinella Jewelry, Bondi Band, Sets Beauty, Wind and Wave Soap, Wine Knots, Priori Skincare, Crest Toothpaste, and Jade Yoga. Thank you everyone who contributed to make this amazing Bitch Box. So here's what you have to do for your chance to win tickets to the event. Email your name, age, and phone number to podcast@WMMR.com. Again, that's name, age, phone number to podcast@WMMR.com for your chance to win. Thanks for podcasting. Good luck, and I hope to see you on Thursday, August 23rd from 6 to 8 at Harris, Philadelphia for the Preston and Steve's sorority party, Kathy's Bitch Box event.
every now and then, if you have kids, you have to watch a lot of animated movies. Some of them you tolerate and you just kind of make it through, or you fall asleep in the theater while you're watching, which I've done on many, many, many occasions. But occasionally there's a little jewel that shines brighter than the others, and the parents love it as well. How to Train Your Dragon is one of those.
I don't have kids, and my wife and I adore this movie.
Amazing.
It's a great movie. This movie.
So excited about the second one. We have the stars and creator of the film in our studio. Please welcome America Ferrera, Jay Baruchel, and of course, director Dean DeBlois.
Good Lord.
Thank you. I'm messing every. And so Jay, you've been here before.
I have indeed. Yeah. Thanks for having us again.
Good to have you back. Thank you guys for being here. Yeah. Like I said, the first movie was so much fun for parents and kids. And we're seeing from the advance trailers and all the scenes so far, this one is going to be the exact same way, man.
It's even better. Yeah. It's really, really incredible.
And we had noticed that the characters in animation form have actually aged a little bit, too.
A little bit, yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah, that was one of the concepts. We thought if we're going to do a sequel, we should track Hiccup's continued coming of age. So it's a new rite of passage. He's a 20-year-old looking into adulthood. And he's got some new problems in front of him.
So, Dean, he and Hiccup, as well as Toothless, are sort of having their rites of passage in this second film, and becoming more aware of what they're expected to do and what the world has in store for them. In fact, is this the second part of a trilogy?
It is indeed.
Okay.
It is indeed. When they talked about a sequel, I'd pitched back the idea of it being a trilogy. So this is going to be the middle act of a larger story.
I love that. Because so many times, and I don't know if you agree with this, but a lot of times the second film is a disappointment.
Yeah.
If you know you have more of a story to tell, that just makes it better. You can be more full in the approach to the story. So I have to tell you, and I just it's an honor to meet you guys. We met you in America. This is our first time. It's an honor. But the film means so much to me and my wife. We're pet people to begin with. We do a lot of animal rescue, and I put this on. We've gotten a 3D TV, and I resisted seeing it. We put it on and we were crying and laughing and loved it. And just
thank you.
There were so many emotions. And Jay, perhaps you can speak to this, that relationships between people and their pets and other people and the weird dynamic sometimes between a son and a dad explored so adroitly in this.
I agree.
Did that speak to you as well out of the gate?
So much so. No, I know what it is to sort of have a dad who's infinitely more alpha than I am.
Exactly.
All dad wanted was for me to play hockey, and that was quickly apparent that wasn't going to happen. But I'm still proud to be his son, you know. And so I just had to find my own way to sort of represent my family. I'm what's called a cat nerd. So the whole all the dragon stuff really speaks to me.
And then that's the Toothless character to me.
It's a big cat.
A big cat.
Yeah, agree. Yeah. Agree completely.
Yeah.
And now, America, you with your character Astrid, did you grow up brushing off kind of the loser guys? Astrid did in the beginning of the movie, or
I grew up always wanting to be. I was the only girl on the baseball team. I was the only girl in the baseball league, basically.
You identify with her in that regard.
I her competitiveness, her type A-ness, her natural born leadership, that's me. And I friggin' love playing Astrid. Growing up, I would have loved to watch a film with that kind of a female character.
She's awesome. I was doing some research last night, and Astrid is an incredibly popular cosplay character with people dressing up as Astrid.
That makes sense. I buy that.
Yeah, because she's a badass, but also there's that soft core to her, but when she needs to step up and fight, she does.
Yeah.
When from the time, obviously, the dialogue is recorded and the animators animate to it. When you first saw the first film, were you as blown away as I was?
Absolutely. I mean, Jay and I, it's been 7 years we've been recording these voices, but we're such a small part of an operation that takes 400 people to create these films over many, many years. So when we sit down to see the final product, we're just as surprised and blown away, and we get to watch it as fans, and that's so exciting. It's a dream come true as a kid growing up to know that your voice was going to be in an animated movie.
Sure. Well, right now, it's Rotten Tomatoes has you guys at 100%.
Amazing.
which can only
go downhill from there.
Still, that's a good place to start at. Yeah. I have to ask you, Dean, the look of the movie, obviously there's the heart and the core that just makes it the home run that it is, and this one is as well. We're very excited for it.
but visually, it has such a unique look to it. There are scenes in the first one that are, you almost want to pause. They're so postcard beautiful. How did that come to be? How much is your hand in that?
Oh, well,
most of it is his hand.
Yeah. I have an amazing production designer. We worked with Roger Deakins as a consulting cinematographer, and so yeah, a lot of it's based on his prolific career as a probably one of the best cinematographers in the world. So it, as an animated film, it kind of steps out of the cartoony conventions, and we use natural light and a sense of very realistic look that kind of pits it somewhere between a live action film and a cartoon.
And that's I think what made you feel it so viscerally the first time, is because we know they're animated characters, but the world, the environment seems so real. And there's a sequence where Astrid, where they're on Hiccup and Astrid are flying on Toothless, and you hold your hand up into the cloud.
Yeah.
It's just such a beautiful scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
When it comes to casting for voices, I mean, do you have auditions, or did you know right away, Hiccup has to be, I know Jay's voice, and or were there auditions?
He had no choice. I was there before him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Chris Sanders and I took over the directing and writing of the first movie 2 years into its 3-year production.
Oh, get out.
So it was an 11th hour, Hail Mary when we came through and kind of reconceived it from page one.
That's but a good Hail Mary.
We had an amazing
Thank
cast.
Thank you very much.
We had an amazing cast, so who I couldn't have done better.
Who else was auditioning for your parts then? Do we even know?
Oh my gosh, I have no idea. Lesser men,
clearly. Well, your passion for the material is evident in the fact that there's obviously the TV series as well.
Yeah,
and you're voicing that.
We do indeed. Yeah. It's been so cool. That's the thing. It's like a lot of people have been asking us, like, what's it like coming back to these characters after the fact, and in between the two movies, we've been doing the TV series, and so there really hasn't been a period over the past 7 years where we haven't been playing these characters. Sort of like it's just another day at the office for us. It's just kind of like she said, like all we do is talk into a microphone,
yeah.
And then over the course of 3 years, a bunch of incredibly talented people make this beautiful work of art that we're allowed to lay claim to, I feel like I stumbled into my Star Wars.
Well, I don't think you could extract any one of you and have it be what it is.
Thank you.
It's a truly collaborative effort, and now you have additions to it, some stellar additions. In
Cato Blanchett. Kalen. Yeah, he's not in it.
Cato Kalen.
How'd you get him?
The ultimate house guest.
That's right.
He paid them.
He was at my pool house.
He was at your pool. He thought he heard something hit the air conditioner.
That's right. No, I think you mean Cate Blanchett.
Cate Blanchett.
Probably.
Yes. One of those K's. Yeah. And I guess the cat is out of the bag, so to speak. Now that she is your Hiccup's mother. But the truth of the matter is that you have an Oscar-winning actress. How did you approach her, Dean, for the
At the Oscars?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No
kidding.
In 2011, we were there. We were nominated for Best Animated Film and Best Score, and I saw her in the kind of the cocktail mixer right before the awards started. So I walked up to her. I said, "I wrote a part for you in How to Train Your Dragon," and she asked me about it. I told her it's this Jane Goodall sort of Diane Fossey like woman who's been living with dragons for 20 years, and immediately, in her beautiful dress and hair done, she started adopting the mannerisms of somebody who might have lived among dragons. And,
oh, that's cool.
And she said, "I'm not doing anything at the moment. Send me the script, because the first movie is a huge hit at our household."
She's got three sons, I think,
sons,
right? And they're all little
right.
fanatical
who
for
Who won
it,
the Oscar that year for the Best Animated?
Toy Story 3.
A lesser movie.
A lesser movie.
A lesser man. Yes.
It's a great movie, but I you guys should have won it. I mean,
I agree completely.
Yeah,
we did. We did mention that. We were hoping that would have taken it that year. Well, where are we with Hiccup and Astrid and the rest of the crew and the storyline for the film?
So it's 5 years after the fact, and we've seen the kind of, we see the direct repercussions of everything they achieved in the first one, and so now dragons are ingrained in the culture of Burke. There's not a single Viking on the island that doesn't have their own dragon, but now Hiccup is not content with just improving Burke. He wants to improve the rest of the world, so he has to see what else is out there. And at the same time, he's kind of dealing with what a lot of kids at that age, at 20, are dealing with, which is, how do I reconcile who I'm trying to be with who my parents expect me to be, and all that kind of stuff.
Has he become kind of a leader amongst the Vikings, because he did bring the dragon culture in?
And well, I like to think, listen, I always think I'm the leader. I think that's a Dean question.
Yeah,
think,
he has become the town hero. And his father continues to be the overbearing guy that he is, but now he's the super proud father who wants him to take over his mantle as chief.
Well, you also have, you have to have a great villain. And you have Jaimin Hunsu. And I think that's something that a lot of the kids, or the, not, I don't want to say kids movies, but the animated movies that are more whimsical, that, that appeal to me the most, have the best, most tangible, possible threat villains.
Yep.
It, it works better if
have
you have
to.
That.
You have to.
And and he brings, what did Jaimin Hunsu bring to the character that, that really rocked your world?
Oh, he's such an incredible voice. He's really menacing. The first time that he came into the recording studio, he told us to turn off the microphones, and he turned around back to the mic and screamed at the top of his lungs. It's the way he prepares as an actor.
Yeah.
We didn't turn off the mic, and we used that scream in the movie.
That's great. That's how he prepares as an actor. Yeah, that's funny. Horrifying.
The funny thing is he
blew
up
his... ruin breakfast, Jaimin.
Is that you too? You scream, America?
That is not how I prepare for my role, no.
Is it sort of a weird thing, though, that process? You talked about all the hours, you know, recording. When you're now that you have the image, you know what everything looks like a lot easier. But is it still weird to be recording this way and recording dialogue that way? How do you as an actor compensate for actually not being on a physical set? And
well, in some ways it frees you up because it doesn't matter how ridiculous you look. You know, you just got to get it through your voice. But it's you know, I love when I get to record with someone else. I got to do a session with Jay. One of the first scenes you see our characters together was a joint session. And those are always more fun because you have each other to play off of. But like, speaking of Jaimin, my character, Astrid, confronts Drago, his character. And when I saw the movie finished, I thought, oh my gosh, that is not how I would have played that scene if I knew, you know, that's how scary Jaimin was being. But I guess it worked out in the end.
It makes you more ballsy,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Well, also, I mean... And his character, I understand, whereas Jay, you know, Hiccup is sort of a benign dragon whisperer. He is a malevolent dragon whisperer.
Yeah, well, he has no interest in sort of trying to get along with dragons. He sees them purely as beasts of burden and
right.
a means to an end and all sorts of awful stuff like that. And I spend the movie trying to convince him otherwise. And, you know, worlds collide eventually.
Sure.
Hey, Nick, I'd forgotten who the guest was. We had him one time, and you had brought up the comparisons of Toothless to Stitch.
Stitch, yeah. And I don't remember. I was trying to figure that out. Actually, I was trying to think of if Dean had been here before, because I wanted to ask you directly. They're very similar.
Yeah.
And that's not a coincidence, right?
Well, I guess there's a certain sensibility that finds its way into our characters. However... Toothless is actually a combination of a Black Panther and a salamander.
Okay.
And he has the head of a cobra.
Yeah.
It's just that we positioned the eyes and the nose, and we gave him ear plates in similar ways.
You mean an actual Black Panther, not Angela Davis?
I was on the Stitch ride in Disney World this past March, by the way. Did you have anything to do with that ride?
We were consulted, and we were there for the early phases of it.
That's his nickname, Stitch Ride.
Stitch Ride. Jay, I loved you in This Is the End, and you've done a lot
Thank
of movies
you very much.
That I've enjoyed. And we had you in here not long ago for
That's right.
She's Out of My League.
Yeah.
And you and Jay Torrance were in here. But This Is the End. And, Jonah Hill hates your guts. And it's just, it is so funny. And the movie can be
really...
I think
really... it's mutual, too.
you're none too pleased with him as well.
No, I don't remember being a huge fan.
It's funny you bring that up, Casey, because I know you guys are all friends and everything. But they're, you know, that... It plays off a dynamic. And I remember reading about that film in particular that you took what sort of existed maybe on a basic level and amped that up. Is there any contentiousness that's ever existed between you two?
Hey, listen, if there was, do you think I'd mention it on the radio in the morning?
We're trying to get it.
No, I appreciate it. No, I'd ask if I were you.
Yeah.
I'd say that they Seth and Evan took the aspects of each of us that lend themselves to comedy the most and then sort of just exaggerated them.
Okay, all right.
And, you know, at this point, it's just they're all the devils I know, right?
Yes, yeah, sure.
So, but in the movie, your character mm-hmm. Isn't really into the whole L.A. lifestyle thing.
Nope.
Is that how you are in real life?
I have
Dean's
friends.
Nodding his head. Yes.
No, I'm not. That's not my cup of tea. No.
Yeah.
But it's also I had read something interesting because James Franco did that movie and also Pineapple Express, which is a hilarious movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't he doesn't party. That's not part of his lifestyle.
No, not that I know of. Yeah, yeah. No, he's quite boring.
He's very boring.
Just a boring weirdo.
Jay, as one hockey fan to another, I just want to say I feel your pain.
Yeah.
I'm sorry about your Habs.
Thank you.
We also lost to the Rangers.
I know.
And I'm sure this is a tough time for you.
It's no fun. I've just kind of tuned out. But I tweeted at the LA Kings, avenge me, and they promised they would. So
I saw that. They retweeted it, which was pretty cool.
Yes,
yeah,
we did. So
we have
far,
enough
so good.
Former Flyers on that team to where we're going to pull.
There you
well,
go. So, exactly you know. Right.
They're Flyers West, actually, is what.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. I'm fine with that.
America, I have to thank you. My brother's a police sergeant in California, and End of Watch is a movie that I recommended to him for its, you know.
Oh, cool.
And he says, man, they got a lot of that right. And awesome. That was just a powerful movie, a total departure from the World of Dragons.
Yeah.
What was it like doing that film? Because it's a real sobering, hard-hitting movie. And you were fantastic in it.
Thanks. It was super intense. I mean, we all spent a lot of time with police officers.
Yeah.
We spent time at the academy. We spent time on ride-alongs. And, you know, not the nicest part of Los Angeles.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, it's barely even skimming the surface of that world. But my oldest sister was a cop for 7 years and got injured and had to leave the force. But the only thing I could think of the whole time was, what the hell was she thinking? How could she do this?
Right.
It was super intense. And we were shooting, while we were shooting the film, several kind of shootings and things were happening around us, like on our set. So that was one of the most intense shoots I've ever been on.
Well, to me, and what he does, if people ask what it's like, he'll say, check out that movie. Check out End of
Watch. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Jay, with all the voice work you've done and your distinctive delivery that you have.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever tried out an impression of you? Have they ever?
Oh, constantly.
Really? You get it a lot?
All the time, man. Yeah.
Do you like any of them?
I like all of them because I'm a narcissist.
It feeds into it.
Yeah. Listen, this awful nasal timbre has been my cross to bear for the bulk of my life. At least let me take joy in hearing other people do it.
Well, that's the best one.
Yeah, who does the? Have you heard a?
Oh my gosh!
A home run?
America does a really good one.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, I had to do it in the movie, and I didn't want to. I was forced to. But I'm very.
So you're kind of mocking him at that point in the movie?
Yeah, kinda. Yeah.
Can we get a little? Is that something you can turn on?
No,
Just do it.
Just do it. I don't know.
Wait, so is the third one completed as well, or do you guys have to go back and do that?
Oh, no, yeah. We got a ways ahead of us.
Okay,
yeah.
Early days. Because it's such a long process for all of it.
And, 3 years apiece, yeah.
Right.
Dina, just again, on the level of the movie and all the work that you guys do, it's got to be fulfilling from all of the stuff that you do to get the response back. And the reviews are always, glowing. Is there any personal story of anybody who's come to you with How to Train Your Dragon, what it meant to them in their lives that just blew you away?
Yeah, there was one recently, actually. There was a little boy who was dying of leukemia in Chicago, and he was 8, and he loved How to Train Your Dragon. It was his favorite movie, and his dying wish was to see anything from How to Train Your Dragon 2 because he knew he wouldn't be around
June.
So I had talked to my bosses, and they'd okayed me taking the movie to him. We were going to watch it in his living room with his other siblings and his parents, and he passed away the night before I left.
Oh, my God.
So, but we just recently did a screening for all of his classmates, his parents, and his two parents are rabbis, and so they brought all of their synagogue along, and that was just last weekend in Chicago.
That's wild. Wow. That's wild.
We went to see the live show
of
Train Your Dragon. Yeah. That was impressive. I don't know if you guys saw it or not.
Yeah. I did. It was really crazy.
The way they were able to do that stuff was pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Big, amazing mechanical dragons.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. So maybe that second one will come around. Who knows?
Yeah, possibly.
Thank you guys for continuing this story.
Thank you so much.
It's great. Thanks we love so it so much and can't wait to see
thank
it.
Thank you
so.
For having us.
You bet. Good luck with everything, Sir Jay Baruchel and Dean DeBlois. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us, gang.
The Kristen and Steve show on 93.3 WMMR. Like the podcast, you'll also love it live when you can call in. Weekdays from 6 a.m. to about 10:30 a.m. on the radio at 93.3 WMMR. Or stream the show live via MMR's mobile app. Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right, we'll start with, how about them apples? Listen to this. An Idaho woman was confronted by police after breaking a glass door, and she did that to help rescue a child in a burnt truck. Tequila Isaacson was at a rest stop in Washington State on Sunday when she noticed a family trying to get their child out of a burning pickup truck in a parking lot.
Oh, my God.
Isaacson searched for a fire extinguisher while someone called 911. She was unable to find one until she noticed an extinguisher behind the locked door of Red Mountain Coffee. So she walked back around the side of the building, saw the fire had spread and was coming from underneath the truck. And that's when she said she returned to her own truck, grabbed a metal fence post, and then she smashed the door in. She said, I got the fire put out and everyone is safe before the 911 call was completed. The entire ordeal was less than 5 minutes. So when first responders arrived, Isaacson told them that she broke the glass door. And instead of responding with thanks, the state trooper said that using the fire extinguisher without permission is theft, no matter how good the intentions are. And she said he outright stated that unless I was willing to pay for it right then and there, he'd be charging me with burglary.
Come on.
Come on.
It's just, this is not good PR.
So they're gonna review the way the case was handled, and they are grateful. They have said that they are grateful for Isaacson's courageous effort to help the child.
But she shouldn't have saved him.
Shouldn't have saved the life.
I mean, that's a restaurant there that relies on doors to keep people out after hours.
I think that they're going to have, it's everything's going to
be set. There are a lot of kids, but there are not a lot of doors.
Yeah. This story, here's a good one in Seattle. A concert goer gave birth to a baby girl in a bathroom stall during a concert at the Neptune Theater Wednesday evening.
It must have been a great concert.
Okay. According to the mother's sister, the baby and mother are doing well. And her sister said, she was like, I need you. And I was like, well, wait, let me take off my ring. So they were in the bathroom.
I'll call you Padalini.
She said, because I didn't want to scratch the baby with my ring. So I turned around to the sink. And then when I turned back, the baby was in her arms.
Whoa.
Apparently just like right shot out. Right out. Yeah. Damian Marley. Damian Marley, the youngest son of Bob Marley, was performing at the Neptune for the evening. And the mother and baby were taken to Children's Hospital by medics, both in stable condition.
Well, maybe this is a good reason why you should probably listen to, you know, reggae when you're giving birth.
Yeah,
if the baby just literally pops out of your uterus.
The janitor said she looked beautiful. She was like in the stretcher. And the little baby was right here. She was like, yeah, and the crowd cheered. This is what the janitor said. A manager at the Neptune said this is the first baby born inside the venue. And I love this line because he goes, I've never seen anybody sneak into a show that way before. He said, but there's a first for everything.
So that's amazing.
That's a good story. Okay, here's a story that we have a connection to.
Really?
Really?
Homeowners associations. You're aware of these.
What did you just say?
Homeowners.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
No. Homeowners associations. Usually there's some rules if you live in a neighborhood.
And you got to follow them.
You have to follow these. Well, apparently, they are not down with the running street-legal upside-down Camaro that was in the neighborhood.
Your average listener. Way.
Yeah, Jeff Speedy Cop Block is his name. Well, anyhow, the Homeowners Association in this particular neighborhood, clearly perplexed by the appearance of this vehicle, stated that all permitted parking areas shall be used solely for the parking of motor vehicles used for personal transportation. Well, the infamous upside-down Camaro sits on top of a running, driving 1990 Ford Festiva that's been modified to wear the Chevrolet Camaro shell like a giant pair of car pants. Racer Dave Montoya was the unlucky recipient of the request from his homeowners association.
My name is Racer Dave Montoya.
As he had borrowed the upside down Camaro from Speedy Cop Block. And so he just had it for a little while. But Montoya, when he got this from the homeowners association, had the perfect response. He said, I told them to piss off. He also said he'll be sending them a link to footage of him driving the car down the freeway just for good measure. So it is quite usable and
legal. Is used. Yes.
Yes. So they weren't able to get rid of it.
A visitor to Oktoberfest noticed a man slumped over at a festival exit with a baby attached to his front on Thursday. As the tourist slowly fell to the side, the anxious man took his baby from him. When police turned up at the scene, they found that the man was so drunk that he was unable to respond to their questions. The 28-year-old, this is in Oktoberfest, so this is in Munich, Germany.
Right.
This 28-year-old from Texas was also repeatedly vomiting, and that led police to call an ambulance to take him to the hospital.
So he figured taking the baby along to Oktoberfest was a good idea.
Officers took the year-old baby to their station at Munich Central Station. The child welfare office then decided to take the baby into care.
What an idiot.
And Oktoberfest is the largest beer festival in the world, attracting a global audience for its mixture of strong beer, traditional Bavarian food, and fairground rides.
You know who went there this year?
Mm-mm.
Matt Cowper.
Oh, yeah?
So yeah. It was sick.
It was, must have been sick.
Sick.
That's one guy who was there. He was getting so sick all over the place.
His baby was already, he was getting sick. It took a lot of people got sick. Because they drank too much and they got sick.
Organizers expect visitors' numbers to hit 6 million again this year. That's crazy.
Cowper said that there are, what it basically is gigantic tents, benches, yeah, and that's it.
Yeah.
Drinking, drinking, drinking.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all it is.
And people getting sick.
And people getting sick.
Yeah. How many million?
Six million.
Million sick people.
What was that again?
6 million sick people.
Sounds sick. All right, and then we'll do one more story. Man, this is wild. Amazing pictures from the Arctic show an army of more than 230 polar bears feasting on a washed-up whale.
We will control the humans. Our time has come. No longer will we have to live in cold areas. We are now moving to warmer areas.
A washed up what?
If the apes could do it, we can do it.
Whale.
Okay.
The animals descended on the beach for an unexpected lunch.
I brought you this whale for lunch. Now you will work for me.
After a bowhead whale became stranded and died on Russia's remote Wrangel Island, the extraordinary sight was witnessed by tourists on an Arctic cruise.
Look at all those suckers.
Yeah, a source at Wrangel Island Nature Reserve said there were at least 230 polar bears, including single males, single females,
mothers with cubs.
Mothers with cubs, even.
Where are you from? Oh, wow. You've got a Russian accent. Yeah, oh, that's great. Do you like whale? Well, let's go over and have a bite.
You can tell about that time you went to Oktoberfest.
Yeah, oh, it was sick. Everyone got sick. We're eating blubber and drinking beer, and everyone just got sick. What's my name? Cowper Bear.
It's a big singles. It's a big polar bear singles mixer.
Are you kidding me? It was, there were single males, single females, mothers with cubs, and even two mothers with four cubs each.
MILF bears. Sick.
Cowper Bear.
Cowper Bear.
Experts called the
this
site.
This is going to be a new thing that kids are going to. Where's my Cowper Bear?
Experts
can't go to sleep unless you give him his Cowper Bear.
Called the sight of so many polar bears together unique.
You pull the string.
Sick.
Pull it again.
Sick.
Everyone loves Cowper Bear.
Oh. Sick.
Yeah.
Do other people get that? The listeners?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Matt's a great guy. We've had him on the show.
Not matter.
Yeah.
You know what? You know what? You can go to Build-A-Bear, and you can get a little audio.
Oh, really?
Thing put in there.
We have to build one.
We have to build.
We have to build a
polar bear.
Yeah.
And then have him say
sick.
Oh my god. Yes, we do.
Let's see if there's a variety of things like this is sick. You're sick.
Sick. Yeah. You're sick. That was sick. Oktoberfest was sick.
Oh, my God. Okay. So, anyhow, the huge number could, in fact, amount as much of 1% of the entire world's population
The
creatures. Yeah, tourists initially thought the bears were a flock of sheep. Sheep.
Sheep. Sheep are sick.
Although, viewing them from a distance, but as a boat drew closer, the lucky...
Those aren't sheep eating that whale.
Vacationers realized that they were... what they were witnessing. The mainly Russian tourists had
just some sheep eating a whale.
Depart from a stopover on the island. when they spotted the bears.
That seems normal.
Just seems like a flock of sheep eating a whale, the way sheep do.
I think they just saw them on the hillside, yeah. and they thought they were sheep. Wrangler Island is famous as the last place on the planet to have been inhabited by the now extinct woolly mammoth.
That's where Wrangler jeans were discovered.
Mm. The hairy beast survived on the island until around 2000 BC. Actually, yeah. I have another story that involves jeans, and it's the oldest pair of women's jeans.
One pair of jeans?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go for it. Do you have it? I'd like to hear about it.
Slightly interesting because... Hang on a second here.
We promise slightly interesting.
Yeah. I'll bring you slightly interesting stories that you may have missed out on.
It's the Preston and Steve Show, Monday through Friday, with loads of slightly interesting stories.
Well, it's one of those things that I've been sitting
and
on...
And gentle grins.
That I've been sitting on for a while, so it's kind of buried in my junk drawer here. But hang on a second here. I'll find it. Because it was...
I'm just curious, what's the oldest pair of jeans that you have?
Not that old. I recently, mine tend to, believe it or not, mine rip in the crotch.
Mine, it happens.
Mine, yeah.
Do you go commando a lot?
No.
Okay.
But then I just toss them out because, you know, it's
you don't need them.
They last for a decent amount of time, but that's always where they rip. And I'd hang on to a pair of jeans for decades if I could.
What's the longest you go between cleaning?
Like a month.
Yeah, that's about average for me. You got it?
The oldest known pair of women's jeans has been recently unearthed, and something about them looks extremely distressingly familiar, this story says. The jeans in question were acquired by Levi Strauss & Company recently and were purchased from a vintage collector who found them at an estate sale. Huh. They belong to a teacher named Viola Longacre, who died at the ripe old age of 100 in 2014.
100-year-old was wearing jeans?
And according to her daughter, Bet, she wore them during the summers that she spent in tents and cabins in the Sierra Mountains attending classes at what was then called Fresno State College. Similar to the Lady Levi's, which were the first pair of jeans marketed specifically towards women, these jeans are thought to be from the early 1930s. The Lady Levi's were released in 1934. Historians speculate that these newly discovered pants were perhaps an early prototype of the lady pant, produced to see whether or not women would wear the jeans. And apparently, they look exactly the same
as
jeans do now.
They
have not changed in nearly 100 years.
We're looking at them. Why improve upon what is a totally viable... I mean,
the stitching on the pocket.
Everything
looks exactly the same. And they don't look all that worn.
Is that like an adjustable waist? Do you see the picture from the back?
Yeah.
I don't know. Either that or maybe the...
Just a decorative loop? Maybe that's to hold your still.
No, Kath, that looks like it's something that you can use to tighten them up.
If that's what it is, they need to start putting those back on jeans.
You like that? Maybe that's a backward-facing baby Bjorn.
I don't think that's what
it
is.
You wear it on your back?
Yeah.
If you forget, you sit down.
Oh.
You
know? Wow, it's a prototype.
That baby's not sick.
The baby's sick.
Yeah.
Well, sat upon.
All right.
Sick, it's crushed.
Yeah. But anyway, there you go.
I find that interesting.
Got
and
a
actually,
story to tie in there.
Kathy's absolutely. Point is well taken. That you know what? Jeans are great, but you got to have size. The size of the pockets matters. The loops for the belt matter. It all matters.
Well, how do you know the size of the pockets matter?
Well, they do.
They do.
I do. I know clothes.
I agree.
You see what a fashion plate I am.
When you get a pair of pants and it's got those deep pockets, you're like, ooh.
Yes.
Awesome.
Well, because you can go on roller coasters without having your stuff fly out.
There you go.
Is it my roller coaster jeans?
These are my roller coaster jeans.
Nothing will fall out.
Kathy, tuxedo pants a lot of times have adjustable stuff on the
those
side.
Are great too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly.
Because that's oftentimes they're rented and they're people rented. Yeah, people have different size waists. So.
And if you eat to the point of sheer gluttony.
You can loosen it up.
You can loosen it up.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. It should be file for you this morning.
Be back in a sec. Stay with us.
This 93.3 WMMR audio on demand program returns after a brief word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Preston. Grilling season is here, and they have done it again at Omaha Steaks.
This is the one and only deal that you can get. It is the Omaha Steaks Grill Ready Collection, a limited time for only $39.99. You heard that right. $39.99 is 80% off, and here's what you get. Two tender filet mignons, two beefy top sirloins, four juicy boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four all-beef Omaha Steak burgers, four traditional kielbasa sausages, four award-winning gourmet jumbo franks, an Omaha Steak seasoning packet, and for this deal, you get four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets for free. Did you hear all of that? You get it's for $39.99, and what's wonderful about this is you're not going to have to stop off at the store on the way home. It's already going to be there ready to go. This limited time package for only $39.99 is available when you go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, and add the Grill Ready Collection to your cart. Don't wait. You want to get this offer soon for summertime. Go to omahasteaks.com, type Gadzooks in the search bar, grab your friends, and fire up the grill.
Are you ready for love? If so, Steven makes it easy, handpicking diamonds to create a stunning engagement ring that's guaranteed to take her breath away. Steven Singer Jewelers, real love experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, or IHateStevenSinger.com.
Hey, it's Preston. Listen, when I want to relax, I go to Hand & Stone Massage Facial Spa. Listen, whether you want a rejuvenating massage or refreshing facial, Hand & Stone is the place to go. Introductory massages or facials start at just $59.95. Visit HandAndStone.com or one of their 50 locations in the Delaware Valley. Restrictions apply. See spa for details.
This is the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Kathy had said there was something she wanted to tell us, and I knew it had to be traumatic because I came in this morning and she was splayed out on the floor in the studio. And I'm like, something happened to her.
Ball of nerves, obviously tense, didn't get a good night's sleep. Whatever it was impacted her greatly.
She was laying on the floor in the studio when I came in.
So last week, Dennis and I went for a walk. We went to get something to eat. We walked to the little deli. We got something to eat. I got a tuna sandwich. I only ate half of it, so I wanted to take the other half home. So I put it in the stroller. Now, I didn't put it underneath in, like, the little storage spot. Like, I just kind of threw it on top, you know, where, like, the umbrella little hood thing that comes over.
So sometimes there's a little shelf there that you can put things on,
Right. So, so that
I use
was,
that
like,
all the time.
That was folded back, so there was, like, a little divot, so I just sat it in there, and we walked home. Right, Casey. So flash forward to a week later. Jason and I were going to go out for a jog. So I put Jason in the stroller. I'm all ready to go. And I get out. I'm like, something smells like poop. Like it smelled like I had run over dog poop. So I'm down on the wheels. I'm looking, nothing. I don't smell it when I'm down there. So I'm like, okay, I stand back up. I get ready to go for my, I start jogging. And I'm like, it smells like crap. What is this smell? This is awful. And so I see a fly. I actually see a fly come over and it lands right in that little divot. So I go to check. Now, wait, let me go back for 1 second. So, because we get home. So after we went to the restaurant, we get home and Dennis says to me, where's that tuna sandwich? And I said, oh, I left it in the stroller. Can you go grab it for me? And he comes back in. He goes, it's not in there. I said, yeah, it's in the top part. I didn't put it underneath. He goes, no, I looked. It's not in there. So I'm like, okay, maybe I guess I forgot.
Fell
it
out
there.
Or yeah,
I
just,
so yeah. I love where this is going and I love that it happened to you.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah. So I see the fly flies right over into that little divot. And I'm like, okay, whatever it is right in there. And now this is a week later. I've completely forgotten about the tuna sandwich. So I hope Jace is strapped into the stroller. I'm already jogging. So as I'm jogging, I pull it forward. White maggots everywhere. My God.
And was the sandwich still there?
Sandwich still there. Oh. Tuna.
Riding away.
Oh, thousands, my God.
Thousands?
Not thousands, Case, but
millions.
There were, and it, but the it was still closed, and I could see them like crawling out of it. Oh, my God. Onto the stroller. So I'm by myself, okay? I stop running, and I'm like, and this is what I'm saying
this
to myself.
This is perfect because I'm hungry.
No, I'm just going, okay, 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 we're going to get out. And so I unbuckle Jace, I get him out, and he's looking at me, Keki, what are you doing? Where are we going? What are you doing? Because I, you know, he knew we're going for a jog. So I take him out. The sandwich is still in there. I don't know if I should just throw the stroller over. Do I pick up the container? What do I do? So I close my eyes. I pick up the container and I throw it on the ground. Nothing got on my hand. And I just toss the stroller because now
and
the
gave up jogging.
Now the container's gone. So the little white maggots are crawling all over the stroller.
Oh,
they're still on there.
So they're still on that platform.
Yes. And I'm okay. And I just, I just throw the stroller over and the little white maggots fall off. Fortunately, I had wipes with me and I wiped off the top of it. But and there they were.
You kept
crawling.
The stroller?
Yeah,
yeah, I am shocked.
I figured that would be like a Viking funeral.
Yeah, me too. On yeah. fire, rolling down the street, like that scene in Red Dragon.
Red Dragon, where the reporter's tied. I have an image. Kathy standing across a field with a bow and arrow, yeah. lighting the end of the arrow.
It was terrifying. And they were white.
Well, that's what your maggots.
Oh, I thought they yeah. were black. I thought maggots were black.
No. How racist.
Yeah. I've never experienced them before. Oh, my God. And they were crawling around and moving. And, oh, why were they alive?
See, I love that this happened to Kathy, too, but probably for a different reason. Because you're a parent now. And she's like the neatest, tidiest, cleanest yeah, yeah. person. And it doesn't matter how neat and tidy and clean you are.
Yeah.
Things like this happen.
Absolutely.
Have you guys encountered...
It wasn't his fault. It was mine. Uh-huh.
Well, similar...
No, that's what I'm saying.
Similar situations with kids.
Uh-huh.
Where...
They distract you.
Or yeah. right. where food gets right. stored in places uh-huh. it should not be.
Yeah. Sure.
Because this to me seems like... I'm surprised it didn't happen because of Jace putting something somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was you guys yeah. that did it.
But you're right, Casey, because the second we got home, Jace was falling asleep, so I wanted to take him upstairs to nap real quick. So I got him out of the stroller, ran inside, you know, and just completely forgot about it. Uh-huh.
Yeah, Steve, we've owned 3 minivans through the run of my children. You know, my oldest is 14
yeah.
and my youngest is 7. So we've had a run of minivans, and especially if you have multiple kids, it's pretty much standard. You have to have one. And through those years, the seating configurations have changed and your ability to take the seats out and stuff like that. It's much easier now. But when we would take them out, you would find all kinds of, how in the hell yeah. did a full Big Mac get underneath here? Right. You know, or whatever it is.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I never had maggots okay. in the car. My experience with maggots, and it usually happens at least once a summer, sometimes twice. If I miss a garbage day, if I miss the garbage pickup, because it only comes once a week at my house.
Yeah, same here.
That's
yeah.
terrible.
And if it's been, and when you have 5 people in a household, you produce a lot of garbage. And if you miss a garbage day, man, are you screwed. It starts piling up. You got nowhere to put it but in the garage.
Right.
And I have come out and I've seen... Casey, hundreds of maggots just squirming all over the garage floor.
Quick question.
Yeah.
How, for example, with Kathy's tuna sandwich, how do the maggots get there?
Flies.
It's just fly, it's yeah. fly larvae?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, flies come in, they land, they lay their eggs, and then they, boom, they just they pop up. Those are flies.
Now, they
have had cases, we talked about this, there'll be a dead body and there'll be a maggot trail.
Sure.
To the dead body.
Yeah.
They're leaving.
They're leaving.
Okay. They're done. They've fed and they're about to open up, you know, go through that chrysalis phase or whatever it is and become a fly.
That's sort of what I saw. So the box was there and there was like a trail of them on the outside of it. Yeah. And then obviously...
Goodbye, everybody. This was wonderful. Oh, please stay in touch.
After it happened a couple of times, I researched the life cycle of a fly.
Yeah.
Because then then you end up with flies in the house and all this other stuff, and then you try to get rid of them. And it's actually pretty interesting how the fly procreates and
okay,
all that.
Okay, but that is the fact.
Yeah.
Maggots are mosquito larvae.
No, fly larvae.
I mean, fly larvae.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mosquitoes you find in standing water.
Okay.
But that's what those are. And it's funny, the gestation period. When you see a large fly versus a small fly, it hasn't grown to that size. It has to do with its gestation period. Depends on whether it's going to be a large fly or a small fly.
How long?
They only stay one size, basically, once they turn into flies.
How long does a fly live? Average house fly, because I believe whatever the answer is, it's a crap.
Yeah, it's not.
They would tell you a week.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a month or so.
And I've had a fly start a miniseries with me and sit next to me on the couch, finish it off.
One of them watched North and South.
The whole North and South. And that was Patrick Swayze was in that, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Hang on, let me go to Colleen. Hi, Colleen. How you doing?
you guys rock.
Thank you, Colleen. What's happening?
Rock and roll!
I actually cut school when I was in eighth grade to go to the Flyers parade. I got to school. I was the only freaking kid there, like a loser. I throw my egg salad sandwich in my locker and take off for the Flyers parade.
Right.
So, you know, fast forward 24 hours or so.
I mean, egg salad stinks to begin with.
Yeah.
Right. Amen.
It's actually made out of maggots.
Yeah.
You would think so, right? So I come back to this school the next day. I'm thinking it was the next day. I don't think it was over the weekend. Not sure. All I know is there's, well, first of all, the stench is horrendous. There are maggots all over my locker. And they had to move my locker. It was the nastiest freaking thing. And then I got in trouble because I cut school and went to the Flyers.
So they move your locker. They had to, I'm sure, power wash the locker.
Oh, I don't know what they did, but dear God, did that stink.
All right. So in the process, Preston, since you sort of schooled yourself on this, the sandwich is in there, and an initial fly lands and lays eggs.
Yes.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah, that's what happened.
The process
somehow or another, a fly, you know, they're into everything. They're looking for a place to lay eggs. They're looking for a place to eat and lay eggs, and that's what they do. They find it.
Looking for a place to raise a family.
And you know what? And maggots can crawl up stuff. I mean, because they've been in my garbage can, and I haven't left the lid open or anything like that, and I'll find them all over the floor. They have climbed up the side of the garbage can inside and found their way out.
Yeah. So what you're saying is they're probably all over Kathy's house.
Most likely.
Yeah. Now, Calvin,
listen, in your garage, is that where the stroller was? Yeah. Look for little black pellet type things because
Jesus.
Once they die off and they dry up, they turn into like this dark reddish brown black.
But taste it. Make sure it's not a peppercorn.
No.
But it looks like almost like rice.
Okay.
And those are dead maggots.
My God.
I think I saw it.
That's not rice. Those are maggots. You think you saw stuff like that?
Yes, I actually made a comment. I go, what is all of that?
Oh, those are dead maggots.
Dead maggots.
Kill me. I want
to
move.
Kathy, you have to move.
If you're a realtor,
why don't you move to Conshohocken since you live in Plymouth Township?
Right. Yeah, let me go. Here you go. Those are pictures of dead ones. I'm going to go to Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, Preston.
Yeah.
Your eyes touch me physically.
Dude, nobody's ever thrown that back at me. Nice work, Mike. What's up, man?
Guys, we used to play practical jokes on one another in high school. You know, peanut butter under the handle, let the air out of your tires.
Oh, yeah.
My one buddy decided, hey, let me throw some fish underneath your seat. Well,
it's a great gag.
It was there for a while, and I kept throwing them going, hey, did I have some girl in here that I just didn't know about?
Unclean.
You know, and it was awful. I mean, talking about a smell, you know, I'm looking all that. Finally, I look under my seat. I'm like, you little bastard.
Now, Mike, was it just a dead fish or had maggots made it in? Or?
Oh, it was maggots. It was awful.
Mike, man. Once it gets to the maggot stage, as Kathy was describing, that is a putrid stink that you know immediately. Either something has died or food has been left there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
maggots are just the nastiest thing.
They're foul.
Well, thanks, Mike. If you ever see those body farms where people who are practicing to become, conduct a
forensic sciences.
They're just maggots all over the place.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because they leave bodies out.
They study decomposition.
Yeah, John and Jane Doe's, and they leave them out and let them decompose. But they showed in one of the specials, just the whole ground was like moving around because it was all maggots.
Yeah. The fish in the car thing is something I always wanted to do, not to a friend as a gag, but somebody who I absolutely did not like.
Oh, were you good? Who was?
If I had someone in mind, that would be something I'd want to
do. We were thinking of someone that we hated a lot about putting a shrimp, jumbo shrimp, in the tube of their office chair.
Yes.
And then resealing it.
I saw it in Maxim magazine. It was called Shrimp Chair.
Shrimp chair.
And you put it.
Just leave it there.
You take a frozen shrimp because it'll take a little while for it to thaw, and eventually you just be putrid, disgusting smell.
There would be no way. Mm-hmm. There'd be no way. You wouldn't open up the chair. Uh-uh.
But doesn't that stink everybody out?
Well, if you don't want, if it's there in an office next to someone,
they would just think that guy stinks.
They'll get him fired.
It wasn't maggots, but do you guys remember when we had the dog treats for Lucy in our office, and there were these little bugs that somehow ended up in the dog treats?
We had dog treats, and it was in our office because I guess I had them or someone
gave them. Yeah, they're under your desk.
Yeah, and there were all these little bug things that were all
everywhere. Over the place, everywhere. There were these little black bugs, and you know who figured out the source of the problem?
Who?
Rodney.
Yeah, Rodney, of course. The Sherlock Holmes of MMR.
Let me go to Marcus. Hey, Marcus, good morning.
Steve.
Yes.
Hey, man.
All right, I love you, man. Keep in touch. We're still on for this afternoon, all right? You and me, we'll do the shotguns, and we'll shoot some skeet.
All right, so I went to Casey's school, Casey Boy, O'Hara, Cardinal O'Hara.
Oh, that makes sense.
And the senior show me, it's my freshman year.
Okay.
We took sandwiches, Brennan a sandwich. You know, I brought ham and cheese with mustard. My other buddy brought a peanut butter and jelly in.
Okay, what
man
is
my other friend brought in... I forget, like tuna fish sandwich.
All right.
We would go to the lockers that weren't taken on the first day, that weren't being used for the school year, and each put a sandwich in one of them.
Okay.
And then the next day, the disciplinarians would come around and zip tie those lockers shut.
Oh, man. So that's diabolical, Marcus.
The whole school year, you would have these sandwiches festering in the lockers. Like, I mean, like, people would cry walking by the science lab, or like, you'd be like, what is that smell? Is that the dead cat that they're dissecting?
So,
no, it's a tuna fish sandwich and you in a locker for 3 weeks.
Marcus, so you did this 1 year, or would you do this year after year?
I'm not going to say I did it year after year, but I saw
But you did it year after
year. Yeah, but we did it year
after year. Hey, Marcus, how old are you?
Well, I'm 21 now. Right. I just got out of school.
All right, man.
What parish are you from?
I'm from St. Anastasia.
All right.
Are you still looking for an opportunity to do the old sandwich gag somewhere?
I mean, to be honest, if you guys have a place, I'll be there with sandwiches.
Thanks, Marcus.
You're okay, Marcus.
All right, take
all right,
it easy.
Got you.
All right,
got you.
Funny.
But that's equivalent to, I mean, on the practical joke end of this, if you're moving, you know, and it's horrible, but some people are driven to acts of rage in this case. And if a particularly bad landlord or somebody or a bad situation, you leave like a London broil and a drop ceiling tile.
Yep.
Hang on, here's an accident. Let me go to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Great. What's happening, Jeff?
About 10 years ago or so, me and my ex-wife, we had a house down the shore, and being in a hurry to go home from crabbing one time, I left a bucket of mackerel from Bit for Bait in the garage in front of the damn freezer.
Oh, my God.
So I get down on a Friday night, and I hear this hissing noise. What the hell is that? I opened the door of the garage. It's like, mother of God, what is that smell? And I turned the light on, and it was a carpet of maggots all over the floor.
Jeff, let me ask you something. I've heard this. If there's a tremendous amount of maggots, is there actually a sound generated?
Yes. Yeah, it's like a gurgling, hissing noise.
Oh, my God. Did you just burn the house down?
I poured, closer than I put gasoline all over them and told my ex-wife, do not go in the garage.
Right.
Yeah.
I just stay the hell out of the garage. Don't go out there.
I have heard that, and so you're verifying it, Jeff, that in a large amount, there is, and you described it as a hissing sound?
It's like a hissing, gurgling sound. Incidentally, I'm a trash collector, so believe me, I see this a lot. But, it's the most hideous smell you've ever come across in your life.
Oh, okay? my God.
It's foaming, it's hissing, it's gurgling, and it's just plain nasty.
You know what I wonder? Jeff, and I also wonder, just these hoarders...
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They've got to have it,
you've
right?
You've got that. Those houses have to be crawling with maggots.
They do.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's just the most hideous thing you could ever imagine. Well, I've been doing this a long time. I almost puked on the spot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good, man.
Yeah, they, I watch Hoarding Buried Alive quite a bit, and there are several of them.
It's maggots.
They'll show maggots, and it's just, oh, my God. And they're resilient too, because like he said, he used gasoline, but when, like, the first couple of times I saw it happen, you know, out of my, trash can, I grabbed whatever I could. I grabbed wasp spray. And I just, you know, just covered the whole area. Those little sons of bitches, just nothing. Wriggled, kept going.
They drank it.
Nothing.
I don't know what kills those things. I have no idea. I mean, you got to kind of step on them or sweep them out. I just grabbed a broom and started sweeping them out of the garage. Just get them out of the house.
So it amazes me, though, that so many get generated.
Yeah.
That so many. She just had a half a tuna sandwich, yeah. And you said it was covered.
Yeah, do me a favor, Marissa. See how many, like, a fly might lay. How many eggs a fly might lay. Let me go to Pat.
Hey, you guys rock.
Thank you, man. What's going on, Pat?
Hey, so when I was younger, I used to be a trash man during the summertime, like down the shore. And like maggots are just like a way of life when you're a trash man.
Oh, dude.
But they would not tell you, like the guys that had been there for years, they wouldn't tell you like any of the things to protect you from, like, you know, getting like glass in your hands or, yeah, you know, shot in the face with maggots. So,
oh my God.
I was standing behind the trash. We had just dumped a bunch of bags in. And when the clamp comes down, like when you're pushing the garbage back, it causes all that air in the bag to collect at the bottom.
Dude. Oh, God.
And so it just popped. And boom, at least 100 maggots come flying in my face. I was not prepared for this at all. Nobody said anything to me.
And wait a minute, Steve.
My mouth was open.
Steve, turn to your left and look at our interns behind the glass over there. They all have their mouths covered up.
Oh,
and
my God.
So, Pat, it got in your mouth, huh?
It was awful.
Tell me that awful. Your coworker was standing next to you laughing when it happened.
Oh, everybody was laughing.
So is that,
they
was
all
that?
Knew. They yeah. all know it's going to happen eventually to the new guys. So the best part is you don't tell the next year, you know, the guys that come along, and they're all just standing there. They get nailed with it.
Oh, my God. So that's sort of your hazing. You get a blast of maggots in the face.
That's about right.
God. I knew where he was going, and I figured, yeah, of course.
Wow.
That's like a garbage man whoopee cushion.
Well, thanks, man. That's nasty. Marissa?
All right, so the average house fly lays batches of 75 to 150 eggs at a time.
There you go.
Totaling to about 500 eggs in about 3 to 4 days.
There you go. That's how quickly it happens.
So you'll go out, when you talk about missing your garbage day.
Yep.
So you when you come out, you'll routinely come out to hundreds of maggots.
Hundreds. Yeah, they pop up real quick, too. It, like she said, it only takes like 3 or 4 days. So if you got garbage sitting out there for a while, fly will find a way to get in. And they can sniff that stuff out. They'll get in there, lay their eggs, and just a few days later, you got maggots crawling everywhere. And then the flies end up in your house, and then it's just...
What happened? Well, I don't even want to go here, but...
go.
But like beds, people have had...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Bed sores and things, yeah. Well, I didn't go to those calls.
Okay.
What is that?
Maggots.
That's what they sound like? Ew!
God almighty.
Ew!
That's them undulating.
All right, well, in case you missed it, the reason we got started on that wonderful appetizing conversation was Kathy left a tuna sandwich.
Actually, Dennis did, but whatever.
Whatever, man. In the garage, in a stroller, and she was jogging with the stroller, and in mid-jog, smelled it, opened it up, and there were maggots everywhere.
And to
who this happened to is the main awesomeness of this story.
I was like hyperventilating. I was by myself with just a little 3-year-old, you know?
The only way that story could be better if you went home and put on an Easter hat and it was full of diarrhea. Because it doesn't get any worse for Kathy Romano than maggots.
It really didn't.
Well, listen, we do need to take a break. We'll come back in a moment. Thank you for your calls and thank you for making it through that segment with us. Stay put.
This summer. Surprise! The MM Army is hitting house parties throughout the Delaware Valley, delivering our summer house party pack. Got a backyard barbecue, pool party, summer shindig? No matter what the party, we're going to help you get it started right. With food from Philly's own Dietz and Watson, premium meats and artisan cheeses, a case of Bud Light Lime or Bud Light Orange, and backyard party games courtesy of Jeff D'Ambrosio Auto Group. Hit up the contest page at WMMR.com to register your party to win MMR's Summer House Party Pack from 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks your summer.
This next guest, I'm a huge fan.
I want to talk to our next guest.
All right, fine.
But she's in the film Delivery Man. This is the Vince Vaughn flick.
Yeah.
And looks
getting
funny.
Very good reviews.
Yep, looks cool. But we have seen her in The Avengers and Safe Haven and How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
And she's pretty damn awesome. So let's welcome her to our show. Please give some love to Kobe Smulders.
Yay!
This morning. Hello, Kobe.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I want to go get a beer and some diamond earrings.
Really? We kid you not. I know it sounds like BS in the commercial, but they give you beer at this
beer.
Store, so it's cool.
Hey, Kobe, I want to start. We'll obviously talk about Delivery Man, but we're big fans of the Avengers and all the offshoots thereof and different stories. But one of my favorite moments actually came on the gag reel of... I don't know if you had a chance to watch it or not, but you were a little emotional about Coulson being killed in that.
Yes. I'm surprised that made it anywhere. That was just sort of a little joke that Joss and I were doing, and now it's for the world to see.
I love it. But that shows you guys have fun on the set, and that's a really cool thing. Yeah.
So
it was a really, really fun movie to shoot.
With Delivery Man, it's a remake of a Canadian movie, correct?
Yes, a French-Canadian movie, it's called Starbucks.
You yourself are from Canada.
I am.
And there's a symmetry, which I won't make much of because it seems just pretty much like happenstance. But they're saying that this movie for Vince Vaughn is sort of a departure. You don't have the Vince Vaughn. I mean, you have him doing his comedic best, but it's all the critics are saying heartfelt and more genuine. And they're saying that it's a unique departure for him. Were you drawn to the script because of that? It's a more touching film.
Yeah, it's a really sweet story. You know, it's about families. It's about fatherhood. And I think that, you know, Vince is kind of known for his comedic skills. He's so funny. But this picture is just really, like, nice and sweet, and he did a great job.
I think this is based on a true story, I guess, where a whole bunch of people or information got out concerning some guy who had donated a lot of baby batter to a particular facility and
nice way to put it.
Right.
You know, I think that actually, ironically, it came out. Our writer, director Ken Scott, wrote Starbuck, which is a French Canadian film, and then a story came out about this happening around the same time. So it was sort of maybe just in the world. I don't know how it was at the same time, but it sort of lent itself in a way to say, like, oh, well, this actually did happen to somebody. And it has happened, and it can happen.
It's funny because you don't think of now you play Vince's girlfriend in the movie. And when you're playing somebody, and you're supposed to have this relationship, do you spend time with the person ahead of time just to try to foster that deal, or do you just hit the ground running?
Well, luckily for us, we just got along really well right away, but we didn't have much time. We had a few days of rehearsals. I think it varies on each film, like how much prep time you get.
Okay.
Us being so busy and it was shooting in New York City, we didn't get a lot of time to spend together, but we got along just kind of right away, so it worked.
All right, now I have a question, Kobe. It's kind of a technical question about donating your seed. And since you're in the film,
okay,
you probably...
Well, I hope I can answer that.
We probably, you know...
You might have developed expertise.
Well, we learn a thing or two, I'm certain, in the film. So 533 children. Does it indicate in the film how many times he went to this clinic to make a donation? Because I have no idea how many, you know...
It does. I'm probably going to get the number wrong, but it's something like 698.
Oh, my God!
Wow.
There's still some left.
I didn't know if maybe you could get, 30 or 40 kids out of one shot.
You would
not.
Imagine, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That's what I always thought.
Yeah, I think this is in the days, like in the late 80s.
Okay.
Early 90s. No, probably late 80s, mid to late 80s. I think that the rules are probably a lot more strict about this now.
Okay. Right. I mean, but I think I remember years ago there was talk, there were dudes who would generate some decent capital by going to do this. And in this case, the kids come home.
Did
to
that
roost.
Happen to one of you? You seem very knowledgeable.
Well, we no. I don't.
Is this something in your past?
This wouldn't be a cottage industry for any of us.
Hey, some people make like college students who go out and make money doing medical testing and things like that. So from time to time, I'm sure people in your industry, the starving actor, from time to time has sold some blood or semen or something like that. You know?
Why not? Yeah. I have to ask because I'm a big fan of How I Met Your Mother. That's ending. Have you shot the last episode yet or no?
No, we have about 9 episodes to go.
Okay.
So we're not quite there yet.
Is it emotional for you? Or you're doing so much movie work.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard to say good. You know, it's weird because it's like, yeah, I'm saying goodbye, but I'm going to see everybody. But it'll be sad not doing Robin anymore, you know.
I love the Robin Sparkles. I would love to see a series or at least a more of her at some point because that's hilarious.
Yeah, I hope we get to shoot another video before we wrap for the year. We'll awesome. See.
Kobe, when we Google your name, how come before The Avengers, before Delivery Man, before Hot or Maxim, it always comes up Kobe Smulders' feet?
Oh, I don't know.
When you Google your name, people are in love with your feet, and it's a little odd.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I have particularly good-looking feet.
The internet disagrees with you.
I can't really explain that.
Yeah. According to wikifeet.com, you're 4.5 stars out of 5.
Hey, we just saw that.
Not
too
shabby.
That's another thing to put on your resume, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? Sometimes it has to do with the shoes you wear. So maybe you wear nice shoes, and that's why they're targeting your feet.
Why are you talking down her feet? I think it's all with your feet, not your shoes necessarily. So I'm
super creeped out, guys.
Sorry. Not by us.
Yeah, I saved it with the shoes. You went back to creepy with the feet.
Well, we have to be. We've been talking about semen and feet. It seems like a good progression.
Well,
No, but the movie is getting very good reviews.
Oh, and by the way, in probably a little less than an hour from now, we're going to have Chris Pratt on to talk about the exact same film.
Get out of here.
No. Nice. Anything we should ask him or anything we need to know about him?
I mean, you can talk to him about getting slapped in the face by a, how old was she, 6-year-old or something?
Okay.
6-year-old,
quite a few times.
Okay.
And we have to check how his feet are rated, too.
Yeah.
So
we can compare.
Yes. Yeah, why not? I got his WikiFeed page.
In fact, he might have been one of the starving actors you talked about, Preston, early in his career who was making money that way.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Good luck with Delivery Man. And
thank you so much, you guys. Have a good morning.
You too.
All right, Kobe Smulders, guys.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Like Canadians are nice.
She was the in the Avengers, like the movie got done, and we're like, who is the short-haired gal? She was pretty awesome.
She's badass.
Yeah. You find out more about her.
She appears in the first episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yep, that is absolutely correct. We got another guest. Yeah. Another guest. We got him coming in and out today. I love it. He is on promoting, actually, what Kobe Smulders was just promoting.
Big fan of his.
Yep, and it's called Delivery Man. Vince Vaughn stars in this film. But you know this guy from Parks and Recreation. And Zero Dark 30, and Moneyball, among other things. Let's welcome Chris Pratt to the show.
Yeah.
Howdy, Chris Pratt.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Hey, thank you for having me on.
No problem, man. Hey, you know what? First and foremost, I want to touch on the fact that for this role, you gained a bunch of weight. 60 pounds? Did I read that correctly?
It was actually 600 pounds.
Oh! 600 pounds. So that makes that whole De Niro thing seem like nothing.
Yeah, I know. I was hospitalized.
Jesus. So if he got to the Oscar, you got to get an honorary something.
Exactly. The question I have when guys like you will do that for roles, because you've lost weight for roles as well, is that your decision or is that part of the requirement of the role or, you know?
I don't know exactly how it works, but with me, it was totally my decision. It was something that I decided to do. I mean, most of the decisions that I think an actor makes like that they'll present to the director and the producers. That's what I did. I said, hey, man, I want this guy to be 300 pounds.
And so, sure, it's tough work. So when you are bulking up that way, I think it's a dream that we all have where we sort of have this reckless abandon with our diet, but it takes a lot of work to pack on that weight in a short amount of time. What did you do?
My wife helped me out a lot. She made me pies. A lot of pies. She would make me an apple strudel or two for breakfast. Have an entire apple strudel for breakfast. It was really just to see if you see something, eat it.
Yeah, hey, we actually had your wife on a couple of weeks ago, Anna Faris, and she told us that guys had a common love of insects.
That's right.
And that you have a bat in a display case at home.
Yeah.
She was supposed to tweet us a couple of pictures of those.
Never did it.
But we
never did it?
No. We also know she was just new to Twitter at the time, so may not have known how to do it.
She She probably still doesn't know how to do it, but I can help her with that.
If you can pass the word along, we'll give you the Twitter handle here. We'd
What's
love
the
to
Twitter handle, and we'll take pictures of the bugs.
All right, it's Preston Steve.
What is it?
All right, Preston. These two names: Preston, P-R-E-S-T-O-N.
Yep.
And then Steve.
And Steve.
No, just Preston Steve.
Oh, and then Steve. Yeah.
And then 933. That's the frequency of our radio station. Yep.
I'm on with Preston and Steve, and you promised them that you were going to give them bugs, and now she's freaking out.
Oh, no.
She remembers.
And then she totally forgot. That's 95% of what we do in our life.
That's okay. I mean, we love her to death, so we didn't take it as a personal slight. We just figured she was busy.
She's going to go do it right now.
I'm so glad we talked to you today, Chris.
Chris, will you retweet it for her as well?
Absolutely.
All right. Cool. Your Twitter handle, the photo, is that you doing Sound of Music in the Austrian Alps?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we weren't quite in Austria, but we were in the Dolomites. So we were close. I mean, we were in northern Italy.
Yeah.
And we were... Anna and I and her family took it was awesome. We took these gondolas up to the top of the mountain, and on the way down, because it's a ski resort, but this was of course in the summer,
right?
But there was no snow, and everyone took Anna and I thought we would just like ski down the hill, but with no skis.
Uh-huh. Sure,
hike our way down through, and it was so beautiful. There were about three stops for beers on the way down. And I was about three beers in for that picture. And okay. It was just one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. I mean,
you're almost a dead ringer for Julie Andrews.
Yeah,
I know. I get that so often. I'm working with the Lifetime Network about doing a biopic.
Right, the way they did the Anna Nicole thing, you'd be Julie Andrews.
You know, they shot a cliffhanger there in that mountain range, the Stallone movie.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and that's it's. So like stark, and the mountains are so steep. It's a really interesting geographical place, but like you're in the same land as where Stallone was.
And judging by cliffhanger, even during the height of dead winter, you can still wear a wife beater.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
and be sweaty somehow.
And still be sweaty.
Yeah, yeah,
you'll be sweating in it. Well, I got to rewatch Cliffhanger.
It's priceless. It's priceless. But we have to talk about Delivery Man because it is getting very good reviews. And the thing we were talking with your co-star, it's funny, but it's heartwarming. And all the critics are keying on the fact that it's almost like a sort of a Capra-esque in its approach. Would you agree with that?
I mean, the filmmaker Frank Capra.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say so. Like Ken Scott, who's the director, he's really got a unique voice, and I think people might know what they're in for with this movie because Vince Vaughn has a certain comedic brand and which people like, you know, but this is not that. This is something completely different. It's a real turn for him, and it does have comedic beats, and it's sort of this outlandish premise. But it's a movie that'll actually make you feel something.
I like that. I mean, to do that right, to do something that actually legitimately and in a not forced way tugs at the heartstrings a little bit while making you laugh, it's a difficult thing to pull off.
It is. I think it is, and they're my favorite kind of movies. I think those are my favorite kind of movies because a lot of movies can make me laugh, but it's not often that a movie will make me laugh and you know, make me feel something.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Kobe told us to ask you about getting smacked in the face by a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh. That was, yes, I got my ass handed to me by this little 16-year-old, or this little 6-year-old named Aaron. By the way, that girl, Aaron, you watch out for her. She's going to be, if I'm still around in 10 years from now, and you guys are willing to have me on, you're going to ask me about Erin, and we're going to look her up, and I bet you she's going to be like this. She's going to be a movie star.
Really? Right. Okay. We'll hold you to that.
Real star. She's a real star, this kid. The man, really a good actor. At one point, I asked her, "Hey, Erin, hon, do you want to run lines before our scene?" And she said, "I'm good."
That's excellent.
It's funny that you should say if we would be willing to have you on in 10 years from now, because You've been on this rise for a little while now, and you're a household name. And I remember seeing you in the 5-year engagement, and my wife and I were watching it. She just fell in love with you right then and there. You know, just I don't know what it is about your character or how you played it or whatever. But was there one role along the line that really was a career definer for you?
Oh, there's been like probably just not having to be a waiter anymore.
Yeah. That's good.
You were a waiter at Bubba Gump Shrimp Company?
Yeah, Bubba Gump Shrimp Company. And then again, when I moved to Hollywood and Beverly Hills, I was a waiter at this little hotel restaurant. And so my very first job, that it was called the Extreme Team. I played a snowboarding NSA agent. And it was the first, you know, it was such a big deal to me because I was able to leave the service industry portion of my career behind, and I never went back. And so for me, that was probably the real turning point. And like at that point, my enthusiasm dial was turned up to 10.
Cool.
And it's sort of been a wave ever since. So there's not any one thing I can point to other than maybe that moment where it became a reality that I would be able to be an actor. And
that's awesome.
And pay my bills by doing it.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Parks and Rec, Chris. And I just have to ask you, your character, Andy, is a really big Dave Matthews Band fan. Are you as well?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Because you play the songs pretty well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks. That's a lot. I got to give credit to a guy named Mark Rivers. He's the guy who does all of the music and the sound for Mouse Rat. I mean, we hack through his compositions, but I do play guitar and sing, but they'll probably auto-tune it a little bit or pick the best take, you know what I mean?
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks.
All right, at what point of your 60-pound weight gain did you film in Guardians of the Galaxy, by the way?
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy was what I shot after Delivery Man, but I lost all that weight plus more. I was down. I was real trim for that one.
Okay. Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen, and we're also looking forward to that tweet from Anna. So,
yes,
and then your retweet of that.
933.
Yes.
And this was a picture of
either the bats or the insects.
Your balls.
Okay. It's a picture. We will take a Chris Pratt ball shot, too.
Do that.
You got it.
Excellent.
Balls for Preston and Steve.
You're the man. Thanks, Chris. Friday. All right, Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Take care, man. We'll see you later. I like that guy even more now.
That's awesome.
Hell of a nice guy. And could you hear Anna in the background?
It's,
yeah. Oh, I forgot. That's hilarious. So I'm waiting. You think we'll get it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think
he'll
make it
happen.
Yeah.
I think he's more active on Twitter than she is. So we'll have to see how that goes. And as soon as it's up and running, we will definitely let you know. We'll be back in just a moment with some more goodies for you. Stay down.
Become an MMR VIP. Get early access to concert pre-sales, special deals, and VIP-only contests. You'll get our newsletter about twice a month, most of which you'll find worthwhile. Sign up now at WMMR.com.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
Diners at Cava Meza learned that there is such thing as too much cheese when 4 flaming cheese dishes set off the sprinkler system at the restaurant.
You showed the video yesterday. I don't know how they could not have known this was going to happen.
About a dozen international colleagues from Oath, a digital media company, were having dinner when they were enjoying the restaurant's Saganaki, which is the flaming cheese. They were among the last tables in the restaurant when they placed an order for 4 of the cheese dishes. Matt Gillis, vice president and publisher from the platforms at Oath, said, "We originally ordered 4. It was an incredible show. They tasted amazing, so we doubled down and we ordered another 4. And a video by them, actually by another guest who was there in the group, shows servers igniting the 4 skillets at once. Seconds later, a sprinkler directly overhead unleashes a torrent of water, dousing the flames and the servers.
It looks like it first sprays out that powder, right? Or is that water right from the get-go?
I think that one was just a sprinkler,
okay.
Yeah. Saganaki is the most popular dish at Cava Meza. The restaurant, which has also several locations in the Washington, D.C. area, specializes in Greek-inspired small plates. Now, in the 12 years since they opened its original location, they've never had that happen.
And they would go?
They've been doing it for a long, long time.
At any point, had someone ordered 4 of the dishes at once?
That I don't know.
That might have been the issue. You bring out 1, perhaps that's not a problem. But they have 4 of them. And the flames are large.
Huge.
Yeah.
They go all over the ceiling. Despite damaging a printer and a phone at Cafe Maze, the restaurant replaced our items, and they were open for business by the next day. So they cleaned it all up. Gilberto Escamilla was sentenced to 50 years in prison. This is a follow-up story.
All right.
For stealing $1.2 million worth of fajitas over the course of a decade.
$1.2 million in fajitas.
And sentenced for 50 years.
50 years. That's the usual fajita theft sentence.
A former employee at the Cameron County Juvenile Detention Center in Texas had taken delivery of the food in spite of the fact that the minor inmates are not served fajitas.
Do they say where he's going to be serving time? Because rumor is he's going to be in the same jail with the Churro Bandit.
Oh, no. Authorities were alerted to Escamilla's behavior when the Labatt Food Service driver phoned ahead of the detention center's kitchen to confirm the delivery of 800 pounds of fajitas. The kitchen worker who answered the phone informed the driver that they don't serve fajitas, mm-hmm. and the driver then let it slip that he had been delivering fajitas there for 9 years.
Wow.
But police found the packages of the stolen food in the refrigerator when they searched Escamilla's home. He admitted as part of his plea deal that he had taken the fajitas and delivered them to his own customers. He said it was selfish. It started small and it got bigger and out of control. I got to the point where I couldn't control it anymore.
So a plea deal yielded a 50-year sentence.
Yeah. The district attorney claimed in this case that it stood out from the other theft cases he had prosecuted, with the total amount stolen reaching a staggering $1.25 million. They requested the 50-year sentence, saying that the theft should never be tolerated, but that it was especially egregious when it was perpetrated by a public servant. So 50 years.
50 years for fajitas.
What are you in for?
Fajitas.
Fajitas.
I'm in for chimichangas.
I love this story. A Florida man was arrested yesterday after allegedly striking his boyfriend in the head with a big mouth billy bass.
A big?
Yeah.
The novelty singing fish. Officers were called to a residence in connection with a reported domestic battery. Upon arriving at the home, cops found Larry Timmerman with a laceration on his head. An injury, the victim said, was caused by a big mouth billy bass thrown by Gregory Carney. In interviews, cops determined that the men have been domestic partners for 17 years and they had been quarreling earlier in the day.
I was originally attracted to him because of his big mouth billy bass.
At one point, Carney went into the den and began playing with his singing fish.
I'm going to go play my fish.
Timmerman said that Carney continued doing this to, quote, just to aggravate
him. Oh, yeah,
him.
Just run away. Go run to your fish.
After having to endure several Big Mouth Billy Bass performances.
Well, I'm going to get my Billy Bob teeth.
Timmerman removed the singing fish from the room and placed it in the trash. When Carney discovered the novelty item was missing from the den, he asked Timmerman on his whereabouts.
Where's my fish?
When Timmerman responded that Billy Bass.
Where is my fish?
How do you get that high?
Where is my fish? It was right here!
When Timmerman responded that Billy Bass was...
You can see the silhouette! It was right there!
Can you do that with the reverb on? When Timmerman responded...
You are such a bitch!
...that Billy Bass was now in the trash, Carney became angry. Carney then fished the singing fish from the garbage and threw it at his boyfriend.
Wait, where's that singing coming from?
The item struck Timmerman in the head, causing a laceration. Carney admitted throwing the singing fish, but said that I did not aim for Larry and struck him in the head on accident.
He was aiming for Shemp.
Carney was subsequently arrested for domestic battery. Timmerman declined medical treatment for his injury.
Man, you know, you don't want police responding to any domestic situation, but when it's one involving a big mouth billy bass,
that's pretty fun.
Yeah,
you would have been. Yeah, I think you would have had a story to tell.
It's a story.
One.
Yeah.
And then finally, one more. A woman was jailed Wednesday for leaving her two children at home alone while she was intoxicated dancing on a bar at a Texas Applebee's.
Priscilla Marisol Flores. I know, but she was dancing on the bar at Applebee's.
And there's Debbie. She comes by when she abandons her children.
Priscilla Flores was charged with two counts of child abandonment with intent to return. She was also cited for public intoxication. Now, at 1 a.m., police officers responded to the Applebee's for a report of a disturbance. Police said that an intoxicated woman was dancing on top of the bar. The woman's identified as Flores. She was incoherent, had bloodshot eyes, and could not balance herself. She allegedly became belligerent toward the officers and cursed at them. Officers said they found out that Flores lived at a nearby apartment complex. There, officers said they discovered two children, both 12 years old, asleep in separate rooms with no adult supervision. Yeah.
When you get, like, regular bar drunk at an Applebee's.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I had a cousin who got, like, so drunk at an Applebee's that somebody had to go and pick her up. Like, she called and she was like, I didn't plan on doing this. I can't drive home. And we were like, you're at Applebee's.
It's like getting wasted at Fuddruckers.
Yeah, isn't it expensive, though?
Are they?
You mean their cocktails?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe she was doing
some cheap... I'm at Denny's and I'm wasted.
Cheap shots. I don't know. Police said that they took her to headquarters to book her. No, I don't think Applebee's is expensive. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be cheap,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think that's why.
I just always assume that those places, the bar...
Yeah, that flair doesn't buy itself.
...was expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe they... Who knows?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Who knows?
That's what I have in the bizarre file for you. Okay, we're going to take a break.
We'll be right back. Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Well, members of the Hollywood elite gathered at the Dolby Theater last Thursday to watch George Clooney receive the AFI Lifetime Achievement Award. Clooney was having none of it, though. I learned that the theater didn't sell snow caps.
What?
Got pissed off. Kendall Jenner. Kendall Jenner denying a report that she's devastated that former boyfriend NBA star Blake Griffin has moved on after the split. Kendall says that's not true because she's already moved on with so many men since the split that when Griffin's name came up, her vagina actually asked, who?
What?
Oh, my God.
And speaking of the Jenner family, Caitlyn Jenner reportedly spending around $50,000 a week wining and dining her much younger girlfriend, Sophia Hutchins. Though they've only been dating for, Caitlyn joked that though she's never spent this much money on a woman when she was a man, she was seriously considering gorilla gluing her penis back up.
Wow.
And that's your
Hey, there was something interesting that happened in both my household and Casey's as well. Two of our kids recently learned how to ride without training wheels.
Oh! Yeah. I saw
two-wheelers.
A dad doing the process yesterday when I was out walking my dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's adorable.
Yeah. But it's also, it's Caroline, my youngest, and taking the training wheels off was symbolic to me.
Did you cry?
Girls growing up. She's close to it. Man.
How old is she?
She's six.
Six, okay.
Yeah, so anyway... But yeah, it's a big, big deal. And we couldn't get
her... How soon before she's bringing home her prisoner boyfriend?
I know. Right? It's not that far off.
Yeah.
But Steve, you posed an interesting question. We were talking about this off air about kids learning to ride a bike. And you were wondering if there are any adults who might be listening who don't know how to ride a bike for one reason or another.
Never learned how to ride a bike that have those balance issues. It sort of came to mind because I saw someone on the bike path down Kelly Drive riding a bike who looked like they had just learned, like with that nervous
pulling into my neighborhood. I saw this elderly couple riding bikes and they were coming around a corner, and the gentleman who was riding was doing that, Stevie, he put his one leg out and the wheel was wobbling, and I'm like, I wonder if he just learned how to ride a bike.
At what, 80?
Or it's been 50 years since he's ridden a bike.
Right, but where did that term, it's like riding a bike. You never forget, right?
Unless you have dementia, then you forget.
And that whole balance thing.
By my reckoning, if you've gone back to crapping in your pants, it's quite possible you forget how to ride a bike.
But the balance thing, I feel like it's not a balance thing. It's a mental thing that you just can't get
But it's
over.
Also a bit of a balance thing.
But no, because if you take the wheel by itself, and you spin it, right? Yeah. You're holding it in your hands. You can't turn it one way or the other. I don't know what it is.
Gyroscopics.
Gyroscopics is the word I didn't know.
And just learned it would never have gotten.
Yeah.
Man, I just had my bike stolen.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's my fault. I didn't lock it. I put it in a place.
Was it?
It was not too far from a bike path. I'd left it in this place a few different times.
Are you going to be here selling crack all afternoon? Could you watch my bike?
Yeah, please.
Were you out for a ride and then you went somewhere and then you came back and it was gone?
Yep.
Oh, man.
How long were you gone?
Too long, too late to leave it unlocked.
A couple hours?
A few hours, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and you can't do that.
No, no, it's, I mean, it's totally my fault.
No,
but
it's not. It's your bike. Not your fault.
I regret not locking it. So.
I understand
in a
that.
Perfectly mindful and proper world, he should have been able to do it, but you do know that you made a mistake.
What I did, Steve, was I put it in a place where I've left it before. And
right.
I've left it for a few hours before, and then I came back, and it had never been a problem.
Well,
and so I just got used to it. And,
yeah.
Where
it
was
off a bike path. I was just heading over to the local pool. Path and the Schuylkill River Trail.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Man.
It was off the path, but
damn.
I know it sucked.
Hey, listen, I had growing up, I think I had three different bikes stolen out of my yard. You know, it was like one of those deals where it wasn't locked up in the garage or on the porch or anything like that, but it was stolen. And I just found out maybe 2 months ago that there was this guy who lived in Springfield who was infamous for stealing bikes. But that was like his thing. You know,
I like your bike outside.
I don't know this guy's name, but he lived in Springfield, and he was the, you know.
The bicycle thief.
JoJo the bike thief. You know?
It's a classic
JoJo
movie.
The idiot bike thief.
Yeah. Yes, I'm JoJo, and yes, I stole bikes, but I've gotten better with that.
But that sucks, man.
You know what?
You should be able to leave your bike somewhere.
You can't, though.
No, and it's just.
You gotta lock it. It's your responsibility.
It is. Well, what if you put a note on it?
Yeah.
Please don't steal. Yeah.
I mean, it's just so easy to steal. You get on it and you ride and you're gone.
Oh, dude.
You know, that's all there is to it.
You see bikes in the city that are just almost virtually welded to the pole.
Yeah.
I mean, just chain after chain and just clamped on.
And they take a wheel with them and that whole thing. When I recently went to Vail with my son and we rented mountain bikes and we were going to, you know, ride down the mountain and then we were going to go into Vail, the town and ride around a bit. And I'm like, do I need to... And I'm asking them, do I need to lock this up? They're like, they're like, no, just leave it because there are bikes everywhere,
right,
over the place, and people just, it's a little different out there, you know.
It's a little okay. So everyone has a bike. There's no issue.
Everybody's got a bike. Nobody's going to steal it. They're a little bit more honorable.
Does Philly have bike share?
Yes,
they do.
In fact, I saw somebody a couple days ago in full like professional bike racing gear.
Yeah.
On one of those bikes.
Okay.
Like,
it's not exactly a racing bike.
Right. With the helmet and the camel pack and all this. On one of those bikes.
So how does it work? You just register for it and then go up and take one?
You're supposed to. You go out to where you were.
Oh, you steal my bike. Yeah. I'm also a member of Philly Bike
Share.
Yes,
you just never knew it.
Unwittingly so.
I have some callers on the line I'm going to go to. I have two ladies named Paige, first of all, which is kind of strange, and they both can't ride bikes, and they're both about the same age. Let me go to Paige number one.
What?
Hi, Paige. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, guys.
Hey, what's happening, Paige?
I am 23 years old, and I can't ride a bike.
And when did you first start trying to learn to ride a bike? Were you a kid?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I was about 6 or 7 years old.
Okay, and through the years, have you occasionally said, I'm going to go back and try it again?
Yeah, I've tried, you know, every so often, and every time I get up on that bike, I just have no balance whatsoever, and I just fall off, and I've hurt myself too many times, and I'm just like, you know what, I'm not even going to try anymore.
Paige, riding a bike is such a part of being a kid.
Yeah.
How did you manage to bypass that?
Well, eventually they came out with those Razor scooters, so that's how I did that.
Yeah, you're okay. Young enough to where you think that was your mode of transportation, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Man,
I could not have survived my childhood without a bike. I went everywhere, miles away on my bike.
The same way
awesome.
Your cars can sort of defines a lot of people these days.
Right.
Your bike was everything.
Totally.
It's how you got around. It was your social life. It was everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember the day that I learned how to ride without the training wheels. I remember the bike I was on.
Do too,
I remember exactly where I was. I was
Mine
in
was
the street and I wasn't allowed
bike.
To be there.
Yeah.
Mine was red.
Yeah. It's vivid. I remember, and I fell down and I fell into a like a rose bush.
A volcano.
Full of
thorns.
Yeah.
Dude,
it sucked.
Do you remember when you would ride your bike as a kid and riding up a hill wasn't that tough? You remember that?
You had the energy to do it?
Yeah.
I contend that all those gears just confound the issue. Because I used to be able to book up a hill.
Yeah.
No problem. I know that they do help. I remember clearly being my parents. I had wanted what they called a spider bike, which was the lower riding bike that looked like a, you know, when they first came out with the low bikes, it looked like, you know,
a chopper.
Motorcycles, chopper bikes.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they got me a Schwinn, like a full-blown Schwinn that I could barely touch the, you know, the pedals because they figured I'd grow into it. They were right in the long term.
Right.
But that's the bike I first learned how to ride. And I remember we did it on the lawn. We had a hill in the back.
Yeah.
And my dad just sort of pushed me down the hill. And that was it. And I remember the whole thing. You're exactly right, Preston. The color of the bike.
Yeah.
What type of day it was. The whole thing. It's burned in my mind.
Yeah. I have two bikes right now. I have like a road bike, which I guess classically is referred to as a 10-speed, but it's got more than 10 speeds. And then I have a mountain bike that's more for like downhill mountaining. And I was thinking about getting a dirt bike. When I saw my son riding around in his little, you know, dirt bike, I was like, you know what?
A BMX bike.
Like a BMX bike.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Actually, my friend, he builds them. Like he'll get the frame and like buys all the parts and he builds these really, really cool bikes.
He buys the parts cheap from this guy who steals from Nick.
No. He buys them all brand new, but they're really, really well put together and like they look really great. I just wonder as an adult if they're harder to ride.
Well, it has to be the proper size.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
I remember as a kid, the Mongoose was the Ferrari.
Why?
What was the
Mongoose?
It was just a great BMX bike at the time. They still make them, but I have no idea what top of the line is now.
Well, oh, you know what?
Cannondale's.
But I'm just, you know, BMX wise. I wonder. We used to have Diamondbacks. I had a Diamondback and I had a Hutch.
And a Starsky?
No, I had a Hutch Pro Racer, not the Pro Raider, which, you know, I did not have a Pro Raider, but my Pro Racer was so light, and that guy from Springfield stole it.
JoJo?
JoJo the bike thief.
What an ass.
Bitch.
Oh. I still ride occasionally, but you know what I cannot do is the professional bikers, how they'll click their shoes into the pedals.
Mm-hmm.
I would fall immediately. There's no
really?
Way I could do
that. Why, do you take your feet off the pedals a lot?
I think, like, if you, I don't know, I guess if you stop or whatever, I don't know. I remember
you eventually
having
stop.
To try it one time, and I was like, no, I gave up. I was like, I can't do this. I'm going to fall off.
His name is Johnny Ding Ding. That was the bike thief.
Wait, that's better than JoJo.
I know.
Johnny Ding Ding?
Johnny Ding Ding. You remember I told you a story? There was the
Johnny Ding Ding.
Johnny Ding Ding was the bike thief, and I told you.
There's his calling card.
Yeah.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Ding. Wow.
I told you a story not too long ago about this guy. I had heard the story. He actually turned a park bench into a bowl. And
smoked out of it.
Yeah. I mean, he literally, he just.
You'd expect better from a guy who turned a park bench into a
That was Johnny Ding Ding?
That was Johnny Ding Ding.
Son of a bitch.
Uh-huh.
Hang on. Let me go to Paige here. She's been on hold for a little while. Hi, Paige. Good morning.
Gadzooks,
Paige. You can't ride a bike?
I'm just about to get married, and I still cannot ride a bike. Hmm.
And how many times would you say that you've really attempted it?
From 5 up to 15.
Really?
And then you just gave up.
Yeah.
I've tried. I've had one too many accidents. And that's my husband-to-be is pretty much threatening to teach me how to ride a bike after our honeymoon.
Can you even ride a little bit, Paige?
Nope. I have the worst balance possible.
Wow. That must suck. I mean, not like you have to ride.
What if you would employ
the
same techniques that you guys do when you're teaching your kids? You do that towel thing?
That's what I want to get her here and do that.
You know what? Let me get
Bob. We can help them.
Bob wanted to comment on that. Well, Paige, I mean, yeah, maybe we can help you out, you know? I mean, do you want to have like a
You don't want to enter that marriage as half a woman?
Mm-hmm. A clinic?
I'm riding a bike. I've walked everywhere where I've needed to go.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. Not only is he riding, but so are my three brother-in-laws. Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. And all of them are motorcycle riders.
Good luck,
wow,
Paige.
Man.
Let me go to Bob. He wanted to comment on the towel thing. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's happening, Bob?
Hey, Preston, a couple years ago or whatever, you were talking about teaching your son how to ride a bike using a towel.
Yes.
Well, my daughter was 6 years old. She wouldn't even ride the bike with the training wheels.
Yep.
So we were down the shore, and I said, come on, we'll try this. It works.
Yeah, it does work, doesn't it? Yeah.
I ran behind her, and I just let go, and she was gone. And now she rides it every day. Once I ride it at nighttime, it really works. So Paige and Paige, get a towel and get someone to run behind
you.
Yeah,
I'll explain how it works.
It would
work for an adult, wouldn't it?
For those who don't know, you take a towel, and you wrap it around their upper torso, underneath their armpits, and then put the two end pieces together near their back, and you hold on as a parent and run behind them. That way you don't have to actually hang on to the bike itself. You're holding on to the kid, and you help them balance, and you can loosen your grip a little bit so they get a little feel for it.
Right.
And that worked for both my boys. It didn't work for my daughter.
I tried using it, and it wouldn't work. And when I went away to Colorado and then came back, she was riding a two-wheeler. Wow. She had taken my son's. The bike that we had for was a little too big. Uh-huh. So we always keep an old bike around for in case we have other kids that come over. So we had this smaller bike. And she got on that thing, boom, it just took off.
Without any help.
Wow. She taught herself.
Well,
that's cool.
I actually, it was a two-day process. I did the towel method on Sunday evening, and that worked just a little bit.
But except then, the difference was you were wearing the towel.
No, I was not wearing the towel. But then Chuck in our programming department told me about, it's basically called a balance bike. So he told me, what he told me to do is, you know, get my son on the bike, tell him to take his feet off the pedals, and just kind of like...
Coast
a little bit, yep. and get the balance that way, and that's what really sealed the deal for him on
Monday.
So
go downhill,
yeah,
and,
not
just
too
coast.
That's
yeah,
what
just
I did.
A gradual
yeah.
hill.
That, when my dad
idea.
Pushed me down the hill, that
yeah.
was it.
Yeah, dude, my little brother, he just hopped on a bike and went. It was the craziest thing. I mean,
just
he might have been like
took off with Wendy.
He might have been like 3 or 4 years old, and he didn't know how to stop. That
right.
was like the big thing.
That came later.
Yeah,
yeah. You aim for grass, you know, like yeah. You, that's how you figure out how to stop, and if. It can be a little terrifying when you're a kid, but it...
Totally. Let me go to Mindy.
Good morning.
Hi, Mindy. You're on the air.
Gadzooks.
Gadzooks, Mindy. What's happening?
Not much. Yeah, I'm 30 years old and never learned how to ride a bike.
Never learned or never tried?
Tried. I tried twice.
You tried two times. And about how old were you when you did that, Mindy?
I guess I was in middle school because of the fact that my best friend was the one that tried to teach me.
Yeah.
And is now dead.
And it was on a mongoose.
Why did you never learn as a child?
Because we lived in an area where I didn't really ride the bike. Preston, you know where I'm talking about, center of Skipback, where there's no sidewalk.
I lived
off of the main, off of 73.
All right, so there was no really place right outside the house where you could go.
Exactly.
And ride regularly. I could see that. If you live in a neighborhood, I mean, that has a wide sidewalk
sure.
and stuff like that, it's much easier for you to learn as a kid or if you have a driveway
right,
that
right.
you can kind of fart around on. But she lives on a main road, and therefore you never really
go
had the opportunity.
For it.
So do you regret not learning, Mindy? And is it something you'd like to try someday again?
Yes.
Okay.
Because of the fact that, like, my mom goes out, and she works night shifts. So in the morning, she'll go for a bike ride. Mm-hmm. And on the weekend, she'll go out and she'll go for a bike ride. And I'm like, well, I could try and walk beside the bike, but
it's just not. So what, you sit home and cry, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and let's see if you want to try and do something.
Yeah, I do. Mindy, hang on. I'm going to get your information. I feel bad for
people
like that.
That are living in the shadows, this subculture of people who can't... Ride a bike. It's so sad.
Let me go to, actually, Denise might have, either she might help or know somebody who might be able to help us. Hi, Denise, how you doing?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, what's happening, Denise?
The Bicycle Coalition of Philadelphia actually teaches adult classes for riding a bike.
What is it again?
The Bicycle Coalition of Philadelphia.
Bicycle Coalition of Philadelphia. And they teach adult classes, teach people who do not know how to ride a bike how to do it.
Correct.
Okay.
They are instructors. League of Bicycle of America instructors that actually will teach an adult who has never ridden a bike, which is strange.
Yeah, I know it is strange.
I'd never really...
Who knew?
Steve, until you said it, it had never crossed my mind. I was always under the assumption... You know how you think most people can swim? There are some people who can't
swim.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I always thought everybody knew how to ride a bike unless you had some sort of physical limitation.
At a certain point. But here you go. We're finding out this...
Thank you, Denise.
We need to make a change, Preston.
Yeah. We do.
I want my country back.
Actually, you know what? To be honest, it could be a pretty... important and pivotal moment in an adult's life that doesn't know how to ride a bike. I mean, it could be really a crossroads that they come to, and you know.
Well, let's if anyone else has this issue, maybe we can set up a little clinic.
Let me go to Katie. By the way, it's all girls that are calling.
I know.
Hi, Katie.
I know.
How you doing?
I'm so sorry to have already thought it at work.
Oh, it's no problem.
What's up, Kate?
All right. So I was 7 when I got my first bike, and. It was Christmas morning. I opened it and I started crying because the bike was way too big for me. My mom was under the impression that I would grow into it because she had brought so many bikes to my older brother.
Right.
So I never learned. I used to take my bike when my friends would go riding and I'd walk next to them with it. I know.
You would actually just so that they would think you were a bike rider. You would just walk with your bike.
Yeah, and then at some point. I was in college, and I decided I have to learn how to ride a bike. And so I was 21, I came home, and instead of drinking for spring break, I tried to learn to ride a bike. I bought one. It was this really pretty beach cruiser. And I learned in my backyard with a hill and everything. And I took a lap around the block, and I was just wobbly and shaky. And I was like, this is great. I can go back to college, and I can ride a bike.
Yeah.
I get to college. I get on the bike, and I feel like I forget everything. And there are all these kids taking bikes to class, whizzing back and forth past me. And I just felt so embarrassed.
Oh,
I couldn't.
Oh,
I
man.
Wow.
Right, I would love to learn. My fiance right. and I, we talk about riding bikes all the time, and I can't.
All right, hang on, Katie. I want to help you.
This
hang
is
on.
A female issue, clearly, Preston. it's a war on women.
Because they don't have that balance
bar. I want my country back.
It's a sissy bar thing.
It's a sissy bar.
Yeah.
Which is not the most PC term.
Oh, man, I can't stand it.
It's a sissy bar for sissies.
When I see somebody riding down the street and they're riding a girl's bike, and I'm like, that's not your bike. You know what I mean? Like, it clearly.
No, I don't know what you mean.
It's
what?
Like Johnny Ding Ding. It's like, did you steal that
that's
bike?
That's not his bike.
What do you think about, honey? Nothing.
When you see a guy on a girl's bike, I automatically think, like.
What are you daydreaming about?
What are you thinking about? That's not his bike.
What are you thinking about, honey? No, nothing.
Nothing. No.
Case, my nephew rides a pink and purple bike. Do you think that's scarring for him?
Oh, how old is he?
He's 3.
No.
And
that's
one of the little one of the neighborhood kids said, "You ride a girl's bike," and the kid's dad was like, "No. It's either a boy or a girl can ride it." And my nephew goes, "No, it's a girl's bike."
Yeah. Oh.
Think about all the though as a kid or in social things that occur around your bike, especially when you're a kid or a teenager, before your car, they haven't had that. She, the one girl was had to just walk along with their bike to give the impression, and you can sense the pain. We can fix this.
There was a moment in my life where I didn't have a car, and I rode my bike to and from work, and it was my mode of transportation. Yeah. I was like 23 or 24.
Oh, really?
And I was living down in like a DC area, and. That's how I got around everywhere.
7th, 8th grade, when I was actually given a longer leash and I could ride my bike to other parishes.
And that's not a metaphor. You actually had a leash.
I actually had a leash. It got stuck in the spokes a couple times.
Mommy, my neck hurts.
No, I mean that was huge. Like, and I couldn't imagine having to walk my bike or walk. Because listen, I wouldn't wait for the kid who didn't know how to ride a bike. I was like, dude, we're going to be at this place. I'll see you in 2 hours.
I totally know what you mean.
Casey, it was funny. You mentioned getting stuck in the spokes. This was a few years ago. And I think it was right after I got my mountain bike. And it had been years since I had ridden a bike. I knew how to do it, obviously, and got on the bike. And it was a little bit cool out. I think it was early spring. And I had jeans on. And I ride down the driveway. And I don't even get out of the driveway. And my jeans get caught in the sprocket and the chain.
Yeah.
And oh my God. And I fell off, dude. I did. Head over heels, over the handlebars,
Jesus,
in the road.
Oh God!
But I pulled a complete peewee and I did a somersault and bang! And I
meant
got
to
up.
Do that,
yeah, totally. But I'm like, I forgot you can't, you shouldn't wear long pants while riding a bike unless you're wearing sweats and taper at the bottom.
You know, I had a number of those situations where God, I flew over sucked. The handlebars. Yep. Oh, that's awesome! Feels so good.
No, I got my pants stuck in my bike chain when I was a kid and I couldn't get it out. And my mom made me take my pants off, and I had to run back to my house in my underwear.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait a minute. What happened?
What?
I got my pants, my sweatpants, stuck in the chain of my bike. I was, maybe 6, 7, 8 years old.
6, 17.
Yeah. And I had to run home in my underpants.
Because they couldn't get the pants out?
They couldn't get the pants out of the chain. It was stuck.
I bet those aren't his underpants. What do you think about, honey? No, nothing.
Nothing.
Hang on, let me go to Sean. Is currently, says here, as we speak, listening to the show and riding his bike to Wildwood.
Whoa.
From Philadelphia. Are you there, Sean?
Yeah, what's up, jabronis?
Hey, cool word. Where are you right now, Sean?
It's Seamus. We're in, Maple Shade, I say, or, Cherry Hill.
And you're with a team of people, I guess?
It's just me, my little brother, and my friend.
Okay, and is this something you do regularly, ride from Philly to Wildwood?
Not really. We did it on Memorial Day. We were listening to you guys at Keenan's, me and my friend Johnny. We just wrote it down just because we just kind of planned it out.
Nice.
And, yeah, we just kind of, like, winged it, and it went pretty good. So I told my son and my brother, they're like, yo, let's do it again. So I'm like, all right, let's do it Irish weekend. So we're on the way down.
Very nice. Wow.
Is it Irish weekend?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I didn't even know that. Wow. All right, big party down in the Wildwoods. Cool,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, hey, Sean, thanks for listening to us on the way down. All right, my man?
Right on, guys. Take it easy.
All right, see you later, bud. All right. So, yeah, you know what, Steve? We got to do this.
Absolutely.
We got to get some adults to learn how to ride a bike. It's just something you should have learned as a kid, and for one reason or another, you weren't able to, or maybe you have balance issues, and maybe these teachers will have to contact them and find out if they can help us out, or anybody who might want to contact us who does this, who teaches adults how to ride
bikes. We'll do a little clinic during the show.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. I mean, I think we should
conduct the clinic.
We want to conduct
with the towels.
Yeah.
You don't want me doing
it's,
that.
Yeah.
It's that easy.
Come on, you just do it. Yeah. I mean, you're an adult.
What's wrong with you?
It's that easy.
No, but you could hear sort of the tremble in their voices.
Yeah.
You know, no, I don't know. How do you not? I just don't know. It's something they are not ready to come to terms with.
Let me go to Henry. He's 30 and can't ride. Hey, Henry, how you doing?
I'm good, you guys.
Hey, so you're 30 years old.
Yep.
You can't ride a bike. Have you really given it a good try several times?
So the first time I was probably 7.
Yeah.
And my dad took my wheels off, and I wasn't ready for it. Really? I was just like, nah, not going to do it.
Did he take your training wheels off or all the wheels? Because that would have made it much more difficult.
Training wheels.
Okay, the training wheels.
And then during college, home during the summer, I tried taking one of my parents' bikes and giving it a go.
Yeah.
And I fell about, I don't know, a million times. And I was just like, nope, got my driver's license. I know how to rollerblade. Don't need a bike.
So no desire to ride a bike. And do you feel that there's a stigma attached to not being able to ride a bike?
There is, but I'm a black guy who can swim, so.
Yeah, you're a black guy who can swim.
So you're good.
So you're able to compensate.
Yep.
All right, Henry. Thanks, man.
He swapped out one for the other.
If you want to learn, let us know, because we might have that clinic, okay?
Maybe.
All right. We'll talk to you later, Henry. That's right. hang on. Dan has an idea. Let me go to Dan. Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's happening, bud?
Perfect idea. Sorority bike ride.
Sorority bike. Pie.
Yeah.
That's not a bad idea.
The sorority bike ride, you could do it for charity or something. Pay $5 and give the money to somebody or something.
Well, okay. Every sorority has, a charity that they donate to. So
yeah,
we can pick one too.
Now, a charity bike ride.
We can train a lot of the girls who have issues with bike riding.
Yeah.
Do a lot of women feel that if they're virgins, they will not appear to be virgins after they ride a bike, Kathy?
I mean, is that like horse riding?
Horse riding.
Remember that was a big thing?
Yeah. We'll take a break. Come back in a second. We'll be right back.
MMR rocks. Enough said.